So, welcome to Strike and Mike. I think this is episode 73. Doesn't really matter. I never can remember. But here we are. I'm with Stryker a couple days late because we had that little mishap with the Ryan Dawson show. Although we ended up putting out a fantastic show on Tuesday, 3.5 hour show on Epstein and
wow.
Networks. Yeah, it's a huge info dump, but people should check it out. It's like, as everything with Dawson, it's like you've got to stop him and slow him down because he'll say this and go to that because his mind, he's literally the guy with the pasteboard behind him smoking a cigarette and sweating. You know, he's literally that guy, but he's not wrong though. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's all actually verifiable info.
Yeah.
But anyway, speaking of Epstein, just a quick, I don't want to do a whole Epstein show, but a couple of new things have come out since we did the Dawson show, which is that apparently shrieking was heard from his cell. Some of the other inmates in the facility have claimed. And now we have an autopsy.
Either someone was attacking him or he saw Mike Enoch's Twitter on his smuggling.
Yeah. Yes, he got, like, someone got him a mobile device and he was looking at alt-right Twitter. No, he had apparently multiple fractures in his neck area, which is apparently something that doesn't happen when you hang yourself. There's two ways to die from hanging. One is if you choke to death, asphyxiate yourself, which won't break any bone. That's if you just kind of like kick a chair out from under you. And if you get dropped from a gallows, it breaks your neck and you die that way. But either case is a different kind of injury than what he had. He had injuries consistent with strangulation. And so there's some
people.
Well,
in a prison cell or whatever, I don't know exactly how the MCC is, but if you're in a cell, you're not going to be able to get enough height to actually, like.
No. So you'd have to do the.
Yeah.
The way people hang themselves in prison cells, my understanding, is they tie a sheet and they, like, lean off of a top bunk or something like that. I didn't know any of this until, you know, the mechanics of this were told to me by some people that have worked corrections. They kind of like lean forward off of a top bunk, and they do that, and they just have the willpower to, they want to die enough that they won't stop themselves choking to death. And eventually you'll pass out, and then you'll just hang and choke yourself that way. So,
and from what we know about Epstein, he's not the type. I mean, he was a total bug man, techno-futurist type, would love to think about living forever. Like, you know,
he's a total megalomaniac as well.
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. There's no actual psychological reason to think that. So you've already done the whole Epstein show or whatever, but one thing I find kind of disturbing is how the media is dealing with this. And it's not just the typical, oh, they're covering it up. We know they're going to do that, right? Because the media is owned by a handful of Jews who probably know or support what Epstein is doing, as in blackmailing the oligarchs of the West.
Yeah, at the very least, they have. We talked about this with Dawson. At the very least, they either know directly or have some idea of what's going on and understand that they need to cover it up. Even if they don't like it or agree with it, they still are more focused on covering it up because he's Jewish and Israel than they would. Like, they're not outraged enough by it to actually inform on their own ethnic group or country.
Right. I mean, that's what makes this such a unique Jewish story. I mean, there's plenty of whites and all types of races of men and so on that like to abuse children. Okay. No one ever denied that.
There's people that I saw an account, a Jewish account that was actually stalking me on Twitter until I blocked him, who was saying, like, oh, so the alt-right thinks because Epstein is out here with, like, the ice cream candy truck. Look at all these powerful Gentiles and whites. Oh, but the alt-right blames Epstein. It's like, that's like, guys.
That's a straw man. Yeah. No one, I mean, I'm sure there are idiots somewhere doing that. Like, but the truth of the matter is that what makes this a Jewish story isn't that Epstein was a pedophile or even that he was trafficking people or even that he's a criminal. What makes this a Jewish story is that he got away with it for so long.
Yeah.
Because in order, if a Gentile in his position can get away with it, if you have a lot of money, you can get away with a lot in America. But what's very unique about Epstein is, you know, when the evidence gets lost, when the judge rules to seal something. You know, this is all part of a Jewish network where Jews are covering for each other. Jews are the only race of people that will cover for their pedophiles. That's what makes this a Jewish story. That's why when you have a Jewish judge, it's a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
You need a Gentile judge to be looking at these things.
And that
you need Gentiles in the media, Gentile reporters going and reporting on this. Because right now, the Washington Post and New York Times are more concerned with people that are speculating about Epstein's death than Epstein's death.
Yeah.
And that's the Jewish story.
That's
a Jewish story.
And that's also a concern with Antifa. And even, as I've said, Matt Christman, I think his name is, whoever the fat guy on Chapo is, what's that?
He's not Jewish.
I didn't say he was Jewish. I was going to say he has been speculating on Epstein in ways that he's not supposed to.
Uh-oh.
And he's been getting called out. And even now conservatives have decided because Matt Christman was saying, like, he's wrong. His theories are not right, but he was getting, like, closer to the truth than the left generally does.
Yeah.
So, and he was saying, like, what if Epstein, like, he said, first of all, he was saying, he made the joke about, hey, maybe the reptilian pedophile conspiracy thing is real. He got called out for that. Then he goes on Chapo and he says, like,
how dare you talk about Jews that way?
He says something like, maybe Epstein was just like, he said maybe there was no Epstein and that was just like a character that was invented as a front for this whole operation. Essentially the gist of what he was saying. Now, I disagree with that because I think there was an Epstein and I believe he wasn't just a character and I believe but he was a front for a big operation or a point man for this big operation until he became useless because he got so exposed. But, you know, so then conservatives were jumping on Chapo for that. Like, oh, look at this left-wing podcast with the conspiracy theories.
Oh, probably Daily Wire conservatives.
Yeah, it was something like that. I can't remember. But yeah. I saw some conservatives like jumping on it and attacking him. And even butt goys might do that because they're just butt goys.
Well, they work for the Daily Wire.
Yeah, yeah.
Ryan Saavedra and people like that. Those guys are fucking.
Yeah, it was someone like that wants to be one of those guys. But anyway, so yeah, and then you see that. With Antifa was also jumping on the Chapo guys about the way they talked about it. So you see that, yeah, it seems like the press equally concerns itself with conspiracy theories about Epstein and then as they do with what he actually did. And they really, a lot of stuff about him has now been squashed. And, of course, there's the Boomer Clinton thing, which was big, and they put out this picture yesterday. I do want to talk about this for a second. This picture that looked totally fake, okay? So that supposedly there's a picture of like a front door and you open it up and there's this portrait of Bill Clinton, painting of Bill Clinton in a blue dress in the Oval Office.
Right.
And now it's confirmed that Epstein has such a portrait. Multiple people that are willing to admit they've been in his house have reported, and the police also said, yes, this portrait exists. However, I still think that picture was faked because there's a lot of elements to the photo itself that made it look fake. But I think that them putting out the fake picture, then it turning out to actually be real, actually being in his apartment, we now have like high-res pictures of the painting. Like, why wasn't the initial picture they put out high-res? All this stupid shit. But the point is, it's all a distraction.
Oh, yeah. No, that goes back to what I'm saying, that the story here is the Jew.
Yeah.
Because the Clintons are enormously powerful, enormously wealthy, and look at how quickly they all throw them under the bus.
But, yes, and also on top of that, first of all, you can say whatever the fuck he is.
They're the scapegoats. I mean, I don't like the Clintons. No one does. But they are the scapegoats for this whole thing.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump is definitely part of this because he is promoting this black guy, Terrence Williams. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
It's like the lowest quality. He's obviously being paid. It's obviously some kind of gay op. Like, from now on, we should just say that GOP stands for gay op.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. I don't like to defend Trump, but Trump is part of making this a distraction for sure.
That's what I mean, yeah.
But Trump is actually not very implicated with Epstein.
No, I'm not. I think he might be loosely implicated with them.
Not nearly as much as Bill Clinton is. But the other thing is, but the other thing is, just real quick, Epstein having that portrait, you know what that is? That's goy humiliation.
Right.
That's why he has that picture. It's not like because Clinton is like in on it. It's not because Clinton didn't have him killed because of that. It's not because Clinton is like leading around by the nose. If anything, it's like, look, I've got this humiliating picture of this goy that I fucked over or could fuck over.
Bill Clinton doesn't strike me as a secret fag or anything like that. He's definitely very heterosexual. He's from Arkansas.
Obviously, he likes them young, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would believe that he fucked the girls on the island, but
of course, of course, he did.
I don't think he would dress. It's kind of preposterous, and I think Terrence Williams. You know, the one other thing about this is that the censorship debate gets shifted to the straw man, right? Diamond and Silk. Remember, the conservatives were pretending that the tech censorship is all about Diamond and Silk. They're taking Diamond and Silk's voice away, or Terrence Williams got censored because they restricted one of his videos on YouTube or something, and all the conservatives they promote this, including Donald Trump. For the record, Diamond and Silk, just so you know, Diamond and Silk are actors.
Yeah.
They're not actual political dissidents. They're actors. In 2016, Diamond and Silk emailed the Traditionalist Worker Party soliciting the TWP, saying that they, for $20,000, they would make a video promoting the TWP. So these are
almost would have been worth it.
I mean, if it wasn't so much money,
yeah. If you could have talked them down to like $200, maybe
it would have been. Hey, it would have been good optics, though.
Well, it would have done was it would have ruined them forever.
Yeah,
but that's also like who gives a shit because they're
But it just shows you where what these people do. They are people that, you know, just like you go to central casting to get a character for any kind of play or theater. These people are these base blacks that do this kind of stuff. They're base blacks that support Donald Trump.
They're actors.
Like Terrence Williams is like, I've never experienced racism until I came out as a black man for Trump. And now the Clintons are coming after me.
No, it's true. And the funny, it's really funny because I remember we used to say on a Daily Show like 5 years ago, like joking around about this, like do blacks realize like how thirsty conservatives are for them and like that they could easily like just grift off this? And it seems like
they've realized
it. It seems like now they've come, at least a small amount of them, but more, certainly more than there were 5 years ago. And the MAGA movement is what really did this, more so than any of the, like Mitt Romney conservatism never did this. Trump conservatism did. And I actually, this is the thing, it's not a popular talking point. And Spencer has said this too, and people haven't liked it when he said it, but it's true. Trump did attract more blacks. Marginally, not in any big numbers, but Trump does better with blacks than any Republican ever before has,
right?
At least in the current political alignment.
I was talking to Richard privately about this, and I told Richard, he agreed, that don't be surprised with all the stuff Trump is doing, like letting blacks out of prison for committing crime after they commit crimes, and then going bailing out ASAP. He could maybe not double, but close to double the black male vote in 2020.
Yeah, and
don't be surprised.
Black women's probably not, but black men, I think Trump could. I mean, this is the thing, when you think that's why I'm done with the Republicans can't win elections anymore as a talking
totally
point.
Fake.
I mean, that's not something I talk about anymore. I used to use that talking point, and there were reasons to believe it, but I've moved on, and I do believe that we've talked about this, and we've been going back and forth on this for the past few months, really. I think they'll be able to maintain some. I mean, I think Democrats will always have a numerical majority.
Yeah.
But Republicans will be able to shift things around enough. They'll be able to attract. I mean, Steve Bannon even said when he went on his tour, I remember that we had a video of him where he was on. He went on some tours after he left the White House, and he was going to speak at colleges. And then I don't know if it was before or after he went to Europe or during that time or whatever. But he was saying, my plan for populist revolution is a Republican Party that gets this percentage of blacks, this percentage of Hispanics, etc. He didn't mention whites at all, because the unspoken assumption was they will absolutely have to keep a white majority voting for the Republicans.
Right.
Because every other percentage of minorities was less than 50%. But if you can do that, if you can keep a 60% white majority, and then these marginal numbers of minorities, they can keep going for a while.
Yeah, and the system is heavily invested in keeping the two-party charade alive.
Yeah, they have to. They have to.
They have to, because if it becomes a one-party state, then you're going to have problems. So they need the charade. They need the political circus to go on. Don't be surprised. I mean, another thing I've noticed is a real influx of Indians, dot Indians,
yep,
into the GOP. And why? Well, dot Indians are cheapskates. So they love low taxes. They don't want to pay. Yeah. Why would an Asian or an Indian want to pay taxes to support a civic state or community that they don't feel they're a part of? They want to come to America, reap the benefits, the economic benefits, yep, and give nothing back. And the GOP loves that idea.
Yep. So it's literally their model minority. It's literally like the GOP model minority. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Just come.
Indians flooding. There's a lot of Indians in positions of power in the GOP, which is very interesting. When you go across the country, you'll often see in very white districts, you'll see that the local leader of the GOP chairman or whatever is oftentimes an Indian, a dot Indian.
Yeah, and they've got, of course, we know about Dinesh D'Souza. There's also this guy, Ramesh Punuru, who's a total bug man. Oh, my God. If he's like, Indians is like a race of bug men already, but like this guy, Ramesh Punuru, who used to be for National Review. And then there's Bobby Jindal and Nikki Haley and such.
Those are the old school.
Yeah, but you're going to get more of them.
Yeah.
And Indians, like, now there's a lot of, like, I don't know. They're just, it's like, dude, they're so, they're, like, I don't know. In a way, they're very pathetic people. But, like, they will go that way because, yes, for exactly the reasons you said. 7-Eleven fucking franchise owner does not, you think he care, and he also doesn't care about these issues of black social justice and queer shit. Like, they don't care about that either.
Right.
Like, they're just like, oh, I want to sell.
Oh, they don't want blacks in their.
Yeah, like a fucking Indian that runs a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts doesn't give a fuck about social justice issues with these minorities. He wants to sell his coffee and donuts and whatever other shit, make his money, and that's it. He doesn't care. Does not give a shit.
And they can get, again, they can get an increase in black votes just by not punishing them when they commit
crimes.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, the GOP previously had this idea, like the Mitt Romney GOP is like, whoa, we can educate blacks on liberty and free markets and the Constitution. And it's like,
and Trump comes
and
in.
And Trump's like, no, let's just let him out of jail.
Trump comes in like, if you have a problem, you talk to me. Your niggas gonna bail you out. Like, that's really what it is. He's like, I can go to Europe and do TNB in the streets of, and no matter what, listen, if you are an American and you don't even own a passport, shut the fuck up about Europe. Okay, I've been to Europe, and even what they call Muslim no-go zones are fucking middle-class neighborhoods compared to most American cities, like Baltimore or Detroit or fucking places like that, okay? Those no-go zones are actually pretty quiet compared to American blacks and stuff. So they're not used to actually seeing, people in the middle of the day in Stockholm fighting in the street. Like, that's not really commonplace there yet. So if you're going to have TNB from America going there and engaging in that kind of shit, it's actually a huge disgrace and embarrassment that the president of the United States chooses to risk a diplomatic fallout over ASAP Rocky, over a rapper, okay?
Who, funny enough, didn't even thank him, which is hilarious. He gave a message on Instagram or something, like, thanking everybody when he got home. He didn't say anything about the president.
And he's also Jewish, by the way.
That's also another possible reason why Trump went to bat for him. But yeah, also, like, there's nothing in Europe that's like, if you were watching the shootout in Philly yesterday and you saw those street scenes, there's nothing in Europe like that. I mean, maybe in London, okay?
Well, like, yeah, no, there are instances of terrorism, but those are like stuff like the shootout in Philly is very common.
But
like,
there's parts of London where they have Africans hacking at each other with machetes. That is true now. So that's like the only, I don't know, the only maybe, and Europe is deteriorating. Don't get me wrong. And I understand that the Europeans they have very good reason to be mad.
Oh, absolutely.
But, like, you're right
Americans that go and lecture them is like, oh, look at how chaotic your country is.
No, no, that's absurd. That's ridiculous. Or the idea that America is somehow, like, more base. And I don't want to fall into, like, anti-Americanism, but, like, what everyone has to understand is that, like, we're ultimately all facing the same problems. So, like, trying to do the America versus Europe thing is ridiculous, particularly on the American side of it, because it's like this country is just bigger and more spread out. It's not that it's better. And yeah, we can have guns and yes, we have free speech, but look at also what has happened in that, like, people take refuge in those things, and also we have room to flee. So we used to have beautiful cities in America with some of them with the European character to them, and an American character to them. And that's gone. It's gone. They're gone. They're trash. They're garbage. The only ones that have nice areas are the ones that are the places where Jews have all their mansions and shit. Like it's ridiculous. Like
and also if you want like true public safety, you know, believe it or not, New York is actually pretty safe. New York City is very safe, and that's because they have a militarized police force that has no constitutional restrictions on it. I mean, just the other day I saw an article that said that the NYPD, you remember the Proud Boy fight with the Antifa? So they subpoenaed Google for a dragnet
of all phones in the area.
On Android phones during that fight in that space.
You can assume they
were
did
able
the same.
To mass subpoena all the fucking cell phones to find out who was there. That is preposterous. That is obviously unconstitutional.
Yeah. You can assume they did the same with iPhones, so they've just got everyone in that area, which is like in New York City, in a block, in Manhattan, it's thousands of people. And it's like they just did it. Yeah, the New York, just so in case you understand, if you've ever been in New York City, and I lived there for a long time, it's a police state. Okay.
Oh.
If you ever wanted to wonder what a police state was like, that's a police state. Now, granted, not that there's cops beating down your door at every second or even that you see a cop on every block, that place is locked the fuck down, and you don't have constitutional rights there. You just don't.
No. No, and the cops have, you know, it's funny, like we've talked about this before, but cops can police based on race and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that,
there's been some issues with that, but like there's been pushback on it, but they did it a lot longer than the rest of America did it.
Right, and if it was happening in a mostly white city, you better believe the ACLU would be fucking going in there, taking names. I mean, so New York City is actually from the public safety perspective, fairly safe compared to most American cities. Okay, and that's because the budget of the NYPD is the size of a military budget.
No. The funny thing is, they say like inner city as like where problems are and such. That term, well, in New York, it's the outer city.
It's the
outskirts. It's the like the Bronx, and then even the places north of the Bronx and parts of Brooklyn.
The Bronx is bad, but the places like the suburbs or exurbs, whatever you call that, across from the Bronx are far more dangerous. I believe that famous the famous suburb? It's across from the Bronx. It was the site of a big legal battle between.
Well, there's Yonkers.
Yonkers, yes, Yonkers.
There's Yonkers, New Rochelle, and Mount Vernon are the three towns north of the Bronx, and they're all garbage pits.
Oh no, no! You're far more likely to be a victim of a violent crime in Yonkers, in many parts of Yonkers, than in the Bronx itself. So keep that in mind when you hear.
And forget about New Rochelle. Oh my God! Have you ever been there? Oh my God!
If you go to New Rochelle, you better bring a double plated body armor.
So I always wonder, like, what even happens in places like that? It's like in like Camden, New Jersey. I'm like, what the fuck even happens in this place? Like, do they even have like? Yo, also, by the way, Newark, New Jersey, 11% white city in New Jersey. they're also having the water crisis like Flint.
Yeah.
Same thing happened there. So the infrastructure is just totally, just don't, I mean, it's like, yeah, it's a mess. It's,
you know,
garbage.
Even Detroit is, you know, Detroit is being gentrified now. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, it's been going on for a little while. It's not anything too extreme, but basically it's, I mean, I know some people in Detroit and they've said that, yeah, there's actually just, there's like abandoned skyscrapers in Detroit. And like,
well, what's going on is this Jew named Dan Gilbert is building an anarcho-capitalist paradise there. Because he has like a, he's buying, if I recall correctly, it's Dan Gilbert. So he's buying up a lot of the cheap property there, and he has a private army for security purposes. So he's bought, so far he's invested about almost $6 billion in Detroit, which in a place where you can buy a house for like $1,000, like that buys you a lot of property. And basically what he's doing is he's creating his own mini, like the Republic of Dan Gilbert in Detroit. Yeah. And keeping all the blacks out and inviting bug men, charging them enormous rents and so on into downtown Detroit. So this is happening on Trump's watch, actually. Trump is actually incentivizing this. And so, yeah, it's very interesting how the chaos is made for the profit of billionaires and plutocrats.
Well, this is the typical – it's a typical cycle of America, which is that – we've talked about this before. Urban life in America was at one point, shall we say, vibrant and ethnic in terms of European heritage. So people of European heritages – came over, formed networks and neighborhoods. Not that they were like, you know, I think the extent to which there was a lot of fighting or whatever between ethnic groups is probably exaggerated, of course, you know. But so you had Greek and Italian and Irish and other neighborhoods in New York City. You had them in cities around the country in the Midwest. You had a lot of Polish, German, Scandinavian, and they all lived in cities. Then civil rights, blacks and housing projects.
Push them out.
Pushed everybody out to the suburbs, where everybody became like deracinated bug people.
Yes.
And now the property values in the cities have plummeted, and Jews are buying them back up and selling them back to whites now that they've been stripped of their culture.
Right. Because so, private Jews like Dan Gilbert, he just bought, for example, the Courtyard by Marriott, right? It's amazingly expensive property in downtown Detroit. He was able to buy that probably at a buy or sell price. And the reason they're able to do this is that in America, you can sort of do a lot of stuff as long as you have money and it's private. So if the government were to dispatch a mass of police to make Detroit a little more civilized, they would run into, quote, civil rights litigation. They would get sued by the ACLU and so on. But if a private Jewish capitalist does it, and he brings his private security firm to basically keep blacks out. That's allowed, you know. So basically, you know, this guy has this portfolio. It's called Bedrock LLC. That's his real estate company. And, you know, he's buying up all of the most iconic properties in Detroit for extremely cheap. And like you said, he's going to sell it back to the Goyim once he clears all the blacks out. I mean, that's how it works every time. I mean, you saw that in Brooklyn. You see that in parts of San Francisco. You see that in parts of Los Angeles. They go in. Because, you know, the red pill about multiculturalism, here's the real red pill, is that liberalism is the default of multiculturalism. The reason for that is it's impossible to govern in a society. It's impossible for the state to set policy and govern over a society where you have too many different people with radically ways of being and behavior. Mm-hmm. It makes it impossible to set policy. So what you get instead is private Jewish capitalists. You get privatization. The state shrinks. It becomes weak. And people like Dan Gilbert fill that space, right? Now, anarcho-capitalists and libertarians might think that's great, but it's a step towards the dystopia that such a system would create, right? The dystopia of all those futuristic movies where everything is owned by the corporation, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the 80s, they thought it would be Asian companies that would be doing that. But no, it's actually just Jews. That's why Jews – one of the reasons why Jews support mass immigration is specifically because it makes it impossible for a state to govern. And thus it leads to plutocracy. Jews are far more comfortable with plutocracy than with a strong state, because they saw that in the Soviet Union, which was a Jewish experiment, it was a Jewish dictatorship. They lost power because when you have a strong state, the public pressures the government, even when they don't have voting rights. They can just pressure the government into excising the Jewish influence because people don't like it. A state is always in the public's eye. Dan Gilbert is not.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, Dan Gilbert can't make a policy directly like no blacks, but he can just price them out. And I mean, the traditional way of people in America after civil rights litigation of keeping blacks out is just making things expensive.
Right.
And so he can just do that. And there'll probably be a few. He'll let in some, you know, black bug men and such, so it feels.
Jay-Z.
Like, yeah, well, oh my God, dude, do you see that picture of Jay-Z?
Yeah.
He looks like. It's like, what's with like the dingy t-shirt and the fucking and the afro with peanuts in it, dude? Like, you look like compared to Jay-Z 20 years ago, where he's like the pimpest looking nigger out there.
Yeah, he's got like the big gold chains.
Yeah,
rock-a-wear.
Yeah, dude, he's fully like
nigger was fly.
Yeah, he had white suits, gold chains, like you know, expensive sunglasses, like everything, like totally just like pimped out. And now he's like, he's in like a suit jacket that doesn't fit, like a t-shirt with a stretched out neck, and he's got like a nappy a nappy half-ro, and it's like, what are you doing? He's talking about social justice. It's like, what? They're making him look like a black bug man. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Well, he probably has consultants that are like, oh, this is the new thing, Jay.
Yeah. No, I'm sure that here, he does.
Put on the Steve Jobs.
That nigger does not appear in public in any way that is not carefully cultivated. Okay, like his image and how he looks is like really like he works on that. So if he's with a stretched out neck t-shirt and an ill-fitting suit jacket and a nappy afro, like a homeless fucking guy almost, that's on purpose.
Yeah, and think, you know, one other thing about Dan Gilbert. Think of what a great plutocratic story this is. He runs Quicken Loans, which is a usury company. Obviously, he's probably giving out. I guarantee that they probably have benefited heavily from the bailouts and so on. I could be wrong about that, but ultimately, though, this is an unethical company, and that's how you make a lot of money. You take that money and then you use it to exercise power. So this Jew is going to fully control Detroit in the next few years. I mean, someone we know.
He also owns the Cleveland Cavaliers, so he's an NBA owner as well, which is funny.
Oh, that's my shock.
Dude, well, Jews love the fucking NBA. It's like one of their favorite.
Oh things. Yeah, they love to invest in spectator sports. But what's interesting is someone who's in the know about this told me that the blacks in Detroit are so desperate about being priced out that they voted for a white mayor twice. Because he's promising to do something about this, but yeah, he's a total scumbag. He's in the reverse mortgage market.
Do you know what that is? Yeah, I know about it.
That's like the most fucking.
That's like how boomers like disinherit their children.
Yes, that is like the most dirty Jewish middleman type of finance you can think of. So yeah, this guy is buying up all of Detroit. You know,
and it's so typical because it's always like, and it's typical of also how this Jew was talking about Epstein and the alt-right's interpretation of it's like, Jews always blame the customer. Oh, goy, but you bought these things. And it's like, look, no one ever claimed white people were perfect. Or white people.
Jews and libertarians always blame the customer.
Yeah, and it's like, I never said that whites or Gentiles were perfect or not subject to temptations, or that there weren't scumbag whites that want to fuck underage girls, or, you know, or people with high time preference. But it's like, the point is, you don't exploit people, asshole.
Yeah, like, the point is, you don't indulge them.
Yeah.
You know? When you see that, you take a moral stand.
Society is supposed to marginalize these kinds of people rather than just... And this is like Walter Block wrote the book, Defending the Undefendable, which is about... And basically, if you read it, it's the most Jewish thing ever, and it's about all these slimy Jewish business practices, and it's about like how actually... These things are fine because it's all voluntary and like both parties benefit and like blah, blah, blah. When it's like, dude, like, first of all, it doesn't advertise itself as ethnically Jewish, but Walter Block was obviously grew up in Oregon. He's one of the most Jewish people you'll ever see. And he presents himself like the funny kind of goofy Jew, you know, like the innocent, funny guy. Like, he's really personable and funny, and he's got that goofy personality. But it's just predatory shit, and he's just making all these excuses for it.
And, right. I mean, that sort of pietas, that's in Marcus Aurelius. I don't know if you've ever read Marcus Aurelius, but pietas is basically subjugate your personal preferences and your personal profit in the name of patriotism and social good. And there's not one Jew on this planet that has pietas, okay?
Not for a Gentile country.
Not for a white, not amongst whites, no.
No, no, they literally, they purposely do the opposite, right? Like, they purposely do the opposite. Like, obviously, if you have some old people that don't have much income, but they have property... You can get them on a reverse mortgage, right?
Right.
Because you can sell, particularly when they're older. But what those people should have is children to take care of them, a family. So that home and that property is passed down among the family. And exactly. the family is there. So even if the old person doesn't have an income, it doesn't matter. Because the family, the younger people have an income. So it's like all this shit, it's subversive of the family. It's subversive of everything. And Ben Shapiro yesterday, did you see this?
Yes, I saw that.
Ben fucking Shapiro, who is just a Jewish bugman libertarian, and makes all of
white countries.
Yes, he's a national socialist.
Does Israel have a significant libertarian party or movement? No. That's only crap that they promote for us here.
They literally don't have one.
Yeah.
Like, they do have a right-wing conservative type party, and then they've got, which is really just nationalist, hardcore blood and soil nationalist party.
Yes.
And then they've got like a liberal type workers party.
And then they have a labor party.
Yes, exactly.
For the record, it was the Labor Party of Israel that started the settlements project.
Yes.
For the record, it was the leftist, leftist social democratic that started expanding the Jewish population into Gaza and into the West Bank.
And those settlements were run a lot of times like workers' collectives.
Kibbutzes, exactly.
Yeah. So that's the funny thing. The two parties in Israel are a hardcore, like the so-called conservative party is a hardcore blood and soil national socialist party. And the so-called liberal party is a workers' party.
Is a Nazbol party.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Well, that's the thing about Israel, is that Israel is what, you know, so the political system there is, it's very simple. There are left-wing Jews and there are right-wing Jews. We need a political system that has solutions that appeal to all of them, right? Now, in America, on the other hand, we have left-wing whites and right-wing whites, but what do we get? We get the culturally acidic left and the liberal capitalist right. So the Israelis have a system where, like, the parties, because they all have the same goal, which is to advance the Jewish race and to essentially to make the Jewish race superior in the Middle East to other races, because they have that supremacist end goal, they don't get caught up in stupid-ass partisan politics. They may get caught up with it during election years, but when it comes to actually governing, they go on the left and on the right based on what's good for the country, for what they think is good for the Jews.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they actively, aggressively campaign against whites doing the same. I mean, you see the aggression that Tucker Carlson is met with, who is actually kind of embodies that, where he's like, you know, he's left-wing on some things and he's right-wing on others. and it's all based on what is good for the nation.
Yeah.
Right? And look at how they hate him for that. I mean, they hate him more because he's not a Hannity-style Republican partisan.
They say he's more dangerous.
Yes.
He's the most dangerous man on TV, they say, because of that. And just the last word in Israel, like, there is fighting and acrimony, but it's all, like, amongst politicians and political elites there. But it's all personal shit.
Right.
Like, it's not... It's they don't get mad because the Labor Party is ideologically like slightly different than Likud, because they're actually not that ideologically different.
Not on the race stuff.
Not on that. But, I mean, there are some, but like Likud Party is more like pro-capitalist and such. But like the point is that the fighting is it's personal. It's acrimony between personalities.
Right.
Like Ariel Sharon and Ehud Barak probably hate each other, or rather Benjamin Netanyahu and Ehud Barak. But they don't like each other, but they don't like each other personally.
Yes.
The politics of the two parties, it's like whatever. People don't get butthurt. There's no like you believe different things than I do and that's a personal insult. It's like you know, they don't
you
do that.
You get that inside of the alt-right.
Yeah.
You get that.
I
disagree with you on this one sectarian issue, so I'm going to destroy you for it.
Which is like a retarded antisocial way that people have been fucking fostered to be in this country, because
it really shows you how political parties and the party machine and partisanship are used to divide whites.
Oh yeah.
You know? I mean, a lot of whites have similar goals. Even ones that vote for Democrats, you know, there are a lot of boomers that vote for Democrats because they're in a labor union or something. It's not because they are for open borders.
Or because they think Republicans are going to cut their Social Security.
That's another thing.
I mean,
right.
they'll straight up say that. There's white boomers that don't like a lot of this woke shit.
No.
Either. They don't like this they probably even have like some racism against blacks and such like that.
Of course.
But they're like Republicans are going to cut my Medicare and Social Security and I don't want that. And so I'll just vote Democrats. Even though I don't like Also boomers are totally clueless as to what's going on somewhat. Like they don't realize how much the country has changed, a lot of them. They really don't, some of them. And
if you're going to run on the platform of making healthcare more expensive for people, which is what Republican parties really is doing.
Yeah.
Well, actually, the Republican
Party unavailable.
Doesn't have anything on healthcare. They don't even say what
they gave it up. They gave it up. But yeah.
So, like, you know, if you're going to run on that platform, you know, if you're a boomer and you're older and you have health problems, you're going to vote for the Democrats because they're promising to protect Medicare.
Their version of the kosher sandwich is like, we're gonna like what Democrats are told is like the same way Republicans are told we're gonna do something about abortion and immigration. Democrats are told we're gonna cut the military budget, put it into social programs. We're gonna give you national health care, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
And they never do that either.
No.
So
the Democrats, one thing you can always rely on the Democrats for is that they will not deliver on their economic promises.
Yep.
Okay? They will never deliver on that. They will deliver on all the social ones. I mean, look at Obama. Obama had the Congress in his first 2 years. He had the – just like Trump, right? If I recall correctly, he had the Congress, didn't he, in 2008?
I'd have to go look, but he might have.
There are some –
He never had it after that. After 2010, he never had a Congress again.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But in the first 2 years – they had – the Democratic Party controlled both chambers. I just saw – wait. Yeah, hold on.
You just look at
them. I'm looking it up now. Unfortunately, I'm just very foggy-minded today. But anyway, they had a lot of the Congress and so on. So the point is that Obama could have done health care then. And instead what they did is they – instead of having a public option, they – basically worked with the Republicans and turned it into a scam, which is what Obamacare is. So it has some popular things like they can't turn you away and so on. But ultimately, it turned into a Gibbs for parasites, for capitalists. So the point I'm making is that the Democrats, like, you know, one of the things I saw in the Democratic debates.
I'm looking 110th Congress of the United States, which elected in 2007, convened in 2008. both Democrats, and about Democrats had majority in both houses.
There we go. So I was right. Yes. Thanks, man. So what did they do? Well, they voted for the bank bailouts.
Mm-hmm.
Obama signed it. They voted for, they could have done all the things Obama promised, hope and change. You know, Obama got a lot of the white vote in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
One of the highest for a Democrat since LBJ. And what did he do? Well, he promised that he was going to pull out of the wars, and he was going to do something about the broken economy. He was going to stop all the greed and corruption, and he didn't do any of it. And they had the presidency and the Congress. So the Democrats are in their pocket too, but that you're right. That is the kosher sandwich. The Democrats always fail on their economic promises, and the Republicans always fail on their social policies.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's something that – so we have a government that transcends left and right. It's just that it transcends left and right against the interests of whites every fucking time, which is why I will never vote and support for a Republican in the foreseeable future unless I really, really like him. I am not going to do the thing where you vote Republican down the ticket under the assumption that, if we don't vote for the Republicans, the Democrats will take power and they're going to put us all in gulags. The reality of the matter is that permanent Washington is governing everything. I saw this story where there was this dyke who was in the number two in the intelligence services for like 40 years. This isn't someone who can be elected or taken out of office. So these are the people that actually execute and make policy in the United States.
Yeah.
You know,
they didn't expect Trump to win. They didn't want him to win. And it took him a little while to get him under control. He's under control now, which is why increasingly impeachment talk is just a fringe thing led by like Seth Abramson and an army of cat ladies on Twitter that actually think this is still happening.
And Tom Steyer,
who's like, cynically trying to whip up he's saying he's got a grassroots campaign. It's like, okay, guy. All right, guy. That's the kind of thing that just like
Tom Steyer, for the record, funds this thing called Netroots.
Oh yes, and Netroots.
Guys like Jared Holt and people like that, like they're groomed in that think tank. The Netroots movement, which is like this young, it's like the young bug men of America, you know?
Yeah.
And that's all funded by Tom Steyer, right? And that's where you get a lot of SJW stuff. It comes from the Netroots, you know?
Yeah.
Netroots Nation.
So yeah, the important thing is there was a brief period when Sessions was Attorney General who actually, if anybody tried to do anything in the Trump government, it was Jeff Sessions, and amazingly they found a way to get him out and make it look like he was the bad guy when they got him out.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Which was a wild thing, and Trump
is partially to blame
for. Oh, no, Trump is totally implicated in this, because Jeff Sessions said he was actually removing resources from the FBI people that were tracking white nationalism.
Yeah.
And he actually was creating all of these rules and example regulations about how immigration judges have to judge these asylum and immigration cases. Mm-hmm. And he was basically they were complaining about this. So the only point at which there was a dip in the fucking floodgates at the border, when they were briefly like closed just a little bit, was under Jeff Sessions, and he also had removed all that. He had removed some resources from the FBI for tracking, completely legal politics in the U.S., saying it wasn't an issue. And the media got on him about that, of course. He was complicit in what they did with James Fields, and then they got him out. But still, that was the only one little blip of hope, and now it's back to just a Washington doing Washington do.
You know, a lot of people will exculpate Trump by saying that there aren't any people in Washington willing to bring about his agenda, but that's not exactly true.
Fire them then. Hire your own people.
Even that's not true though, because you got figures like that guy, General or Colonel Doug McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen that guy? He's on Tucker a lot.
I think I might know who you're talking about, but yeah.
Yeah, anyway. He's very anti-war and anti-intervention.
Oh, yeah, so, I know the guy, yeah.
So why didn't Trump put him in the position that John Bolton's in? I mean, that guy is very qualified for the job. So why did he fucking select him? Well, because Trump is in on it. At the end of the day, well,
Why didn't Kris Kobach get a job?
That's another thing.
Kris Kobach is ideologically anti-immigration. Like, there's no question, and I don't have any question that he is. Like, I don't think he's a shill. He's ideologically anti-immigration, which means at least somewhere, probably doesn't say it, but he's pro-white. And the highest office he achieved was Secretary of State of Kansas. And Trump briefly put him in charge of this voter inquiry panel, and then they killed it because it was, like, racist.
Right, and if you want to bust the tech monopolies, which Trump verbally says he wants to do something about, why don't you appoint Josh Hawley? He has that very exciting – Senator Josh Hawley has a very good bill where they're going to do something about tech censorship. If Trump was serious about addressing that, appoint him to the FCC. Appoint him to the congressional trust branch. Why don't you appoint guys like that? So that's like – it goes to show you that it's not just that Trump doesn't have people to work with. Remember also, he fired Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
You know?
Steve Bannon also, you know, not the best, but, you know, it's still –
he's not the best, but he's like the least worst of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump fired him. So all the positive forces in the Trump administration, the closest thing to a positive force you will get – were all fired or blocked from their positions we assumed they would get. I mean, I remember all the way back in early 2016 when we were doing the Trump thing, people were saying, oh, yeah, Trump is definitely going to get people were doing, like, fantasy Trump candidates.
Yeah.
And like, okay, you put Kris Kobach here. You put, Ted Cruz on the Supreme Court. You put, you know, that's what people were.
None of it happened. Well, Jeff Sessions did get AG, which a lot of people, that was a fantasy pick. And then other fantasy picks were Kobach for DHS, which he was interviewed for, never hired. Why not? No, literally no reason. And they even planted
a picture. Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah, Tulsi Gabbard was going to be Secretary of State or UN representative. This was another thing. That was another. I remember. And she went in to talk to him. Yes. They planted these stories. They knew who we wanted.
Yes.
And then it never happened. Tulsi Gabbard, they talked to her about Secretary of State. That would have been an incredible move. And then they put this picture. I don't even remember this picture of Trump and Kobach together. Like, I think it was at the White House where when he was interviewing him for the job. Maybe it wasn't the White House, some other place. Interviewing him supposedly for the job of DHS secretary. And Kobach's holding this folder. And if you, like, zoom in on the papers, it's, like, stuff about immigration. And so people were like, oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And it's just like, no, none of it happened. And now Trump, the funny thing is Trump now has total legal clearance to divert money from the defense budget to building the wall. Where is it? Where is it? He got.
We were even doing a fantasy pick where Mitt Romney would be the Washington rent boy for Richard Grenell, the fag that Trump appointed as ambassador of Germany, who is leading by the Richard Grenell is leading the be gay or die policy of the U.S. government.
Yeah,
be gay or die.
No, but this is actually something that went kind of unspoken. Is that the Supreme Court? Because Trump did the national emergency and, like, supposedly diverted money for wall funding.
Yeah.
And now it's gotten through. This lawsuits and such wound their way up. Trump has legal ability to take Defense Department money and build a wall. He can do that. And he can do it on his own authority. The Supreme Court okayed it. It's all the way. It's like, it's done. It's a done deal. It's all the way up through the courts, everything. So where's the fucking wall? Now that that's okay, it's all forgotten. It's all forgotten.
Yeah, that's kind of remarkable. No one.
I mean,
no
he can literally. There's. You can't give an excuse. The Supreme Court decided that he could do this, and like, it's just like he's got. It's free and clear. He can just do it. Just so, and he's not doing it. He's saying he's doing it, but he's legitimately, like, not doing it. And he's not even really saying it, because it would be absurd to run a campaign in 2020 on building a wall, when now that he actually can fucking build a wall, and he's not building it. So what the fuck?
I mean, you know, in the run-up to the election, he should at least pretend to be building something. Like, I can't.
He's going to have to say he built a wall. I don't even know. But like we said, Trump is going to become a neo-Nazi in the 2 months before the election.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to become, and all this shit on Twitter, we've done this so many times, but I'll just do it again. All that shit on Twitter, provocations against the squad, the, like, obviously, like, racist dog whistly tweets he was doing a few weeks ago, media was going into absolute fucking apoplexy about it. Like, this is all an act. And you know, boomers on some level are satisfied with it, but like we can't be satisfied with it. You know, I actually had like these weird Jews that like these alt-right adjacent Jews that follow my Twitter and try and trip me up or get me to like think Trump is okay again or like Hazzoni or something like that. They were coming at me when I was criticizing the racist tweets of Trump.
Yeah,
and they were like, well, at least we get the tweets. And I'm like, no, dude, like, fuck that. And then, you know, and some people got mad at Richard for what he said on CNN, which was accurate. Like,
very good what he did there. I support what he did there.
No, it was good. It was good.
What he said there, I agree with entirely. I would much rather have an extremely polite and politically correct non-racist tweeter who governs in a way where he deports illegal aliens and closes the border, then have you know, a boomer that may give you an N-word pass, but then lets everyone in.
Yeah, okay? I mean, that's, I mean, like, in a way, it's like really, I hate to do it, but it almost is the ultimate boomer presidency, the Trump presidency, because it's like he's breaking rules of typical decorum because he doesn't care about them, or he doesn't understand them, or whatever, or he's doing it to troll people, and he's completely ineffectual behind the scenes, or like actually just like, and except, you know, for Israel, but again, that's what that is. But yeah, did you see this thing today that Israel is not letting Ilhan Omar, yes, and Rashida Tlaib into Israel?
Funny, yeah.
Ben Shapiro's in the awkward position of having to defend it, and he's saying like, he says on Twitter, he says, this is for optics sake, basically, Israel should have let them in. He said, Israel's not obligated to allow anybody inside its borders that want to destroy it. United States is, though, right? Okay, but America is. Europe is obligated to do that.
Yeah.
But Israel, and it's like, I can agree that premise on an intellectual, yeah, philosophical level, no country is obligated to allow people into its borders that want to destroy it. But does that mean we can deport Ben Shapiro? I mean, Ben Shapiro says he doesn't care.
It's kind of interesting that they're targeting Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, but not AOC and Ayanna Pressley.
Well,
that's very interesting.
AOC has capitulated to the Zionists. I said long
she
ago
voted. She voted for. She voted for the BDS, to support protecting BDS.
So really?
She voted with the squad on that. But it's very interesting that they haven't banned her from Israel.
Well, she's a that would be – the optics of that would be unbelievable. Like, because she's a media –
it's not optics, man. It's that she's with them.
But also, like, she's – she's a media sensation, but why is she a media sensation?
Right, the Jews are promoting her.
Yeah.
Her campaign was largely supported by Jews to some degree.
And one of the ways that Jews support her...
They were not as you know... It wasn't until she got to Washington that the Jews started to crowd her.
Yeah.
And maybe give her, you know, show her the ropes a little bit of Washington. We're like, listen, you can do this, but you can't do that.
But it's also important to understand one of the ways boomers Jews support her is by giving boomers like anti AOC red meat to keep her in the spotlight with media, right? Like they make her like they want boomers to be like they love like, misdirecting boomers is one of the easier things to do, and the Jews have been doing it for a very long time. Oh, Epstein, the real culprit is Bill Clinton. Oh, like all the liberalism that you hate, let's focus that onto AOC. And then you can read Breitbart articles about her, you know, nasty Breitbart articles about her, and like nothing actually changes. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know. It does seem that the basic partisan system of the U.S. is, to go back to what we were talking about before, how they have to maintain it. They kind of have to maintain it. They can't ever have the Democratic Party, as like a mono party, ruling thing, because it would just lead to some kind of revolt. Because the people that don't feel represented by that would revolt. So like it's you can't, you know, they need the two parties. They need the simulated action where you think you're scoring points by talking about the Clintons and AOC and shit. Meanwhile, Jews are in the background. I mean, this is it's the classic way.
What I notice about misdirecting boomers is they often do like the. Republicans are the worst with this. They will...
Well, more boomers vote Republican.
Yeah. Well, they select, like, for example, they'll take the Clintons and they'll create an entire crusade against the Clintons personally, right? Like, it's very personal for them. Like, they do this whole thing where they teach people to hate the Clintons as for personality reasons, which is the dumbest reason to hate someone in politics. Sorry, man. I'm getting a lot of calls because my internet is someone's trying to fix my internet. But anyway, so the point I'm making here is that you'll see that with Nancy Pelosi, you'll see that with the Clintons, and now you're seeing it with AOC. Mm-hmm. With Ilhan Omar, on the other hand, they're doing it with her even more. But with Ilhan Omar, it's not the kind of tongue-in-cheek kind of, look at what the Clintons are up to now. No, it's not that. With Ilhan Omar, they will end up getting her out of Congress if she makes any more noise about Israel. Okay? They will get her out of Congress. So I think that that's on another level. But, you know, it's more like Steve King, right? Like the Democrats may teach their voters to hate, you know, Mitch McConnell. But the tone they strike when they have MoveOn.org cyber protests against Moscow Mitch is very radically different from the tone they strike with Steve King, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Steve King, they outright censor him. They outright censure him. So, you know, you have to see the difference between whether you're being manipulated into caring about shit that doesn't matter or they're actually taking serious measures against someone. It is very different. Steve King is analogous to Ilhan Omar in some ways. Ilhan Omar has gotten away, skated by a little bit because of her race, mm-hmm. and the fact that she's an immigrant. But if it wasn't for that, she would be gone by now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, no white person could talk anything close to what she said about Israel and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Oh, no, no. No, no, no. They would be ruined forever. So I want to talk a little bit also about this L.A. Times piece. So we all know we're all feeling the brunt of the censorship. It's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is that it doesn't seem to be working. So it says here, this is an op-ed. It was written by Thomas J. Main for the L.A. Times.
Main.
And this fellow claims that since Charlottesville, and this is for all you people out there that say that Charlottesville was the end of the alt-right, that the alt-right collapsed after Charlottesville. It says here that alt-right websites, which he defines, he says the top 10 most well-known alt-right websites have seen their traffic grow by 43% since Charlottesville.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 47%.
Yeah, yeah. Since, I mean, I can attest that. Are we included in that top 10? Or
yes, I would assume so.
I mean, I would assume so, but I don't know. But I do know that our numbers are up. I mean, I don't want to give exact numbers, but we are. Even in the last few months, our numbers are up. Like, yeah, we've actually experienced I would say about a 5 to 10% spike in just the last 2 months or so, and I don't know exactly why. I'm wondering if it was Epstein related, maybe. I'm not sure, but we have definitely experienced a slight bump in the last couple of months.
Well, I showed someone who's actually who's very knowledgeable about marketing. I showed them the similar web traffic numbers for
which is
PRS.
Not, by the way, that is not
it's not entirely accurate, yeah, but it is yeah. It is a metric people use. Even if it's not accurate, you get an idea. And this person, you know, I explained to this person that TRS is just like, it's literally just some podcasts. Like, there's no content, there's no forum, there's no nothing. And
content,
the traffic,
but there's no forum, yeah.
Yeah, the traffic is in the millions. When I say content, I mean like written content that is updated daily and so on, you know, updated multiple times.
There are podcasts updated daily, though. There's always a new thing at least once a day.
Sure, but it's not like a news site where you're incentivized to go multiple times a day to the site.
Right.
So SimilarWeb has TRS in the millions, okay? It's over a million. And that's just a website that hosts
over
podcasts.
A million in what time frame?
In a month.
Yeah, and that's what is that? That's visits?
Yeah. It's not unique visits, but it's visits. Yeah. So that's for a website that doesn't have any, you know, regularly updated, you know, every hour you have a new article type of thing. Mm-hmm. So he saw that, and he's like, wow, that's really good, he said. I didn't know that. And this is all considering, now, when you look at SimilarWeb, like how people access TRS, it's in almost entirely direct links. And that's also very spectacular. It's very rare, actually, that you directly go to the website. Usually people discover...
Oh, dude, our traffic Google. Is like... I can. There's a few things I can reveal about traffic. I don't want to give total numbers out, but I would say 75% is people literally just typing the URL into their browser or clicking a stored bookmark or something.
SimilarWeb says it's 82%.
All right, well, that's about right, probably.
Roughly correct, yeah. So... imagine if we weren't blacklisted from Google.
Yeah, that's because
all major
of that.
Search engines.
Yeah, like it's we do post links to shows and stuff like that on Twitter, and I'm sure it gets posted on Gab and on Facebook and stuff like that and around. But yeah, most people that are fans of the site just come back.
Yes,
indeed. I mean, we had this. We had to upgrade our hosting at one point because we had this issue where what we were calling F5 gang. Like on the days when, you know, TDS or Strike and Mike or FTN are expected to come out, like at about the hour people are used to them coming out, sometimes like WordPress would fail because people were F5ing so hard waiting for this show. Yeah,
I mean, so the point is that, you know, a lot of people get blackpilled. Like, I had a conversation. In fact, I had a conversation with you about this on Twitter, and someone thought we were fighting, and I'm never going to talk to you again after...
That's retarded, because we have one disagreement.
After you disagree on some small, stupid issue.
Yeah.
But we were discussing this. Actually, we should debate that a little bit now. So,
but finish this other point, though.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, finish what you were saying about...
Well, the point I was making is that Ben Shapiro is the number one conservative podcast on iTunes because no other podcast is allowed.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like being first in a race of one person.
Well, that's the thing. So it's sort of like, you know, they can talk about how we have, you know... first of all, this guy is blown away by the numbers that we do have. And that's given that not only do we not have... the support of you know, rich Jews, the way mainstream conservatives do, the way Will Chamberlain and all these people do. Not only do we not have those things, but we're actively suppressed, and we still have these numbers. Well, you can't find us on Google. You have to know about it, and so it's word of mouth and direct links, and we still are growing. And that's, you know... And if they didn't, and imagine a world, like as you said, where Google didn't juke their algorithms, where they didn't do things so, like, if you search for a kind of a topic that we talk about, you get, like, SPLC links about why you shouldn't hate people, or if you didn't search the Holocaust, you didn't immediately get, like, the ADL page on the Holocaust, right? Because that's not what people, when they search the Holocaust, want.
Well, that's what you get when you search Holocaust revisionism.
Yes.
That's what you get.
Yeah.
I mean, the Holocaust, like, I understand.
Is
like,
the Holocaust...
Wiki. Yeah.
Or is the Holocaust real? But no, but dude, when you searched years ago, they found out... I remember when this happened. It was around 2013. They found out that you search Holocaust and you get Holocaust revisionism. And the reason for that was because the neutral Google algorithm that they built was, which is the theory behind it, which is fine, is we are going to give you the most relevant based on their whatever their algorithm. This was before it was politicized. Whatever the relevancy is, and then the thing that most people click on after searching this.
You know, when I started writing a book, I was writing a book about the Jewish question, about Jews in the 21st century in 2015. This is before I got caught up in all what happened since, right? So I don't really have as much time to write the book. But when I was writing in 2015, I was doing research, and I saw a video of Abe Foxman from the ADL. And he was freshly released. He was retired from the ADL, but he did a talk in a synagogue. And he was complaining about, I believe, either the kosher tax, something related to Jews. And he said, why is it that when you go on Google and you type Jew, the first link you get is Jew Watch? Do you remember that website, Frank Welker?
Yeah.
You get Jew Watch.
Yeah, yes.
And I don't know what happened to that site at this point, but anyway. So Abe Foxman was saying that the ADL called up Google very angrily demanding that they take JewWatch down from the algorithms. And he was saying, like, when I did that, Google said, we can't do anything about it because the algorithms are neutral. This is what people want to read. When people click on the first page, they see JewWatch, and that's what they click. So that's why it goes up and up and up. Similar things happened with MartinLutherKing.org, if you remember that, which, oh, by the way, was totally vindicated in recent years. Everything they said, which at the time they called a conspiracy theory, to say that Martin Luther King was a bisexual subversive, and it all came out in the FBI documents. It's apparently true. What Abe Foxman said is that – so at the time, because it was such small potatoes – Abe Foxman actually coordinated, the ADL coordinated a bunch of synagogues across the country.
Jew Watch is not up anymore. The site.
Yeah, it might be gone.
But the ADL. I've actually got this. I looked this up real quick. It's on Snopes, actually, and it's status true. So it says, does the top search result in Google for Jew point to an anti-Semitic site status true as of 2004? In 2004, the New York Times reported the first listed site on a Google search for Jew was JewWatch.com. The ADL and some other people basically got some campaign to remove it, and now the site
is
down.
What they did was they coordinated – for everyone out there that says Jews don't conspire, that they just think this stuff up and they're all on the same page – the ADL coordinated a low-key campaign, where every synagogue in the country, the people in it, were told to go on Google, search Jew, and then click every link that is pro-Jew over and over and over and over and over again until they managed to push Jew Watch down a little bit. But it still was on the first page.
They also pressured Google, and at that time, Google said, we can't do anything, which is funny because Google's run by two Jews, but then... Now Google has abandoned any such principles like that.
Go on Bing. Bing still has it. Bing, for now, is still a fairly neutral algorithm. And search every one of the terms you think of on Bing and then search them on Google. You will get drastically different results. Go search kosher tax. Kosher tax on Google. Back in the day, when you search kosher tax on Google, one of the articles I wrote in 2015 would come up on the first two pages on the kosher tax. Now you search kosher tax and you get Wikipedia, kosher tax conspiracy theory. Number two, Snopes, another kosher source. Number three, ADL. The title is The Kosher Tax Hoax, an anti-Semitic recipe for hate. The fourth is the actual kosher tax website where you can pay them to give your food kosher verification. So I guess, you know, it's so funny. The first link is that it's a conspiracy theory. The fourth link is people asking you money to make your food kosher. So, I mean, it's just like, you know, it's just contradictory. And then, of course, at the very bottom is an article for QZ, which is another Zionist-controlled fake news publication, where it says – it's kind of like a cope for more brainy types, where it says less than 2% of the U.S. population is Jewish. So why is 40% of our products got the kosher mark of approval, right? Meanwhile, you go on Bing and you actually get the dissident websites that tell you what the kosher tax actually is, okay? So again, this is how they do it. This is how they cheat you. And that's why more than anything, they are more angry. You know, when Donald Trump goes out there and he says, go back to your country and stuff like that, they get mad about that. But what they get even more mad about is when Donald Trump says the media is fake news. Because without public trust in Snopes and Wikipedia and ADL, which are all very, very controlled. Wikipedia is notorious. You can, if you're a wealthy Jew, you can pay a moderator, an admin on Wikipedia to fix your profile and hide things about you and so on. And also, you have these moderators, these bugman leftist activist moderators on Wikipedia that slant politically charged topics drastically to the point where Wikipedia is almost useless on these topics.
Well, it's useless on anything that touches on the kinds of topics that we discuss. For basic uncontroversial facts, sure, but for the kinds of topics that we talk about, it's going to be politically slanted, and they will, like, they can't keep like, they actually have a Wikipedia page on great replacement theory, right?
Yeah.
And they can't, the problem with it is that, you know, yesterday we have Anderson Cooper and Jorge Ramos on CNN acknowledging this, there's a what they're calling a demographic revolution. Jorge Ramos manages to keep a straight face. Anderson Cooper can barely conceal his glee at the thought of it. And then you go to Great Replacement Theory on Wikipedia, and it tells you it's all a big conspiracy theory started by, like, what the gay Frenchman, what's his name? I forget his name now. Who did write the book, The Great Replacement. But it's like, and then there was another article that came out focusing on him specifically and about, like, how gay he was and the kind of gay stuff he was doing in order to, like, obviously, you know, I don't know what they thought they were doing because most people haven't even read that book, but, like,
yes,
it's, yeah, it's,
you kind of get some insight because, you know, leftists will report on bias when it comes to anti-Israel stuff, like certain leftists on the margins. And there's one thing. Are you familiar with Mint Press? It's a foreign policy oriented news site, Mint Press. It's very anti-Zionist and it's very anti-war. But nothing on there is fake news. It's all real. And they tend to report embarrassing things about the Israeli settlers. They report on BDS and sanctions and so on. Anyway, Israelis actually managed to lobby Wikipedia and use coordinated moderation to blacklist Mint Press as a source. So stuff that's really shady, like the Daily Beast, which is a lot of it is fake news, that stuff is considered to be an authoritative source on Wikipedia. But Mint Press, who may disagree with the Daily Beast on foreign policy in Israel, they are blacklisted, so you can't use them as a source, you know. The explanations they give for this are very tedious, very, you know, it's obviously politically motivated, in other words, and they're complaining about that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All these things. I mean, Snopes, forget about it. Snopes,
well, the funny thing is that this coverage of the Jew Watch issue with Google is from 2004. And it's amazing how different it is from now, because in 2004, Jews didn't feel threatened, right? Okay. All right. We're back. Sorry. We were interrupted. Stryker had an internet technical glitch. So we are. Yes. This is 45 minutes from what you last heard. I believe I was talking about the issues with Jew Watch and Google and how Google's response to having Jew Watch be the top of the search results in 2004 is different than what it would be today. I think we all get that. We wanted to move on to a discussion of how the elites are increasingly using their media as sort of advice columns for other elites on how to manage people. They're not trying to directly talk to the people anymore. They're
all the major media, like New York Times and Washington Post, is paywalled. And now they've figured out how to paywall you, at least in my experience, when you go and open up the incognito tabs. You can't read anything they're writing.
Yeah, it's there's no like good. It used to be a few. There used to be a few algorithms you could use to get the articles. Like one was you could open up a paywall tab. Another was you could put it into archive.is and then read it. But whatever. I find that linking, if you want to read them, you can link them from Twitter. But that's not the point. They are paywalled. But the other thing is, if you read them, it's elites for elites. Or yes. Elites at least for elites and aspirational people, like upper middle class people, right? Like it doesn't, they're not attempting, and the New York Times kind of always did that, but not attempting to appeal to the broad mass of the public. Even CNN. CNN wouldn't have Anderson Cooper literally gloating. With a gleeful expression on his face about America becoming majority non-white, and then Jorge Ramos saying, there is nothing they can do to stop the demographic revolution. Demographic revolution is how he said it. They wouldn't do that if they thought, like, 10 million Americans are watching.
Right.
They do that because they know.
Fox or something, they wouldn't be saying that.
They do that.
CNN 10 years ago, even.
Yeah, they do that because they know 800,000 people are watching.
Yeah, and they're all in the coastal cities. And yeah. Probably disproportionately Jewish and like, 50-year-old women.
Yeah, and also, or, like, upper middle class, you know.
And sassy.
Yeah. So it's people, it's those types of people talking to each other, and typically, when they talk about us, which they talk about us inordinately, and it's not as a lot of boomer conservatives think they do this because they want to elevate us or inflate us or make it seem or disparage conservatism by associating it with us or something. That's not the motivation. It's because they're actually afraid of us.
Right.
That's what's going on.
And so, they're plotting against us. Like, that's what it is.
They don't really care. They don't really care if you're a boomer type conservative. They don't like you. They think they look down on you and think you're dumb.
They'll mock you.
But they
there
don't.
There's a big difference between mocking something and fearing it.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Ku Klux Klan in the 1930s versus the Ku Klux Klan today. And that is totally a shift in power that the Ku Klux Klan
And they
had.
Don't write about those kind of the boomer style conservatism in any other way than mocking. I mean, we mock it too. But they don't write about it in any other way than mocking it. They don't write articles on how do we deal with this, what's the plan, what's the strategy, how do we break these people of this, because they don't need to. They don't care to.
You would think people engaged in if the elites. Another thing to note is that the elites are not partisans. The New York Times is not a liberal paper.
It's not.
It's a Jew paper.
Yeah, it's become more transparently so. Like, arguably, you could say, like, in the 80s, okay, it was a liberal paper. But at this point, it's Jewish. And in fact, they have more so-called conservatives on their editorial board than they've had in the past. They used to only have the one, you know, they used to have William Sapphire, and that was it. Everyone else is liberal. Now they've got, you know, David Brooks and Barry Weiss. And they've got Ross Douhat is the fucking token butt goy.
How about Brett Stevens?
Yeah, they got Brett Stevens also. So they've got three.
Max Boot. Max Boot's in the Washington Times, right?
Yeah, Max Boot is not with the New York Times. Max Boot is like independent. He's not with any editorial board, but he gets
Jennifer Rubin.
Jennifer Rubin is Washington Post. But who cares about Jennifer Rubin? Like, nobody. She's just like some ugly old Jewess.
And you know what's interesting is that the lines in the debate, for example, between the liberals and the conservatives at the New York Times have become much, much muddier. It's very hard to see where they disagree.
Right. You can't really tell where Barry Weiss differs from...
Yeah, Maggie Haberman or whatever.
Yeah, I don't even know. Who are the liberals at the New York Times?
That's an interesting point, actually.
I guess there's Paul Krugman. Yeah. But he mostly writes on economic stuff, but actually mostly what he does is say Paul Krugman, I would say he is a Jew, but he actually is a party hack. Like, he literally says the Republicans and their heartless economic policies, like Trump is going to destroy the economy, whatever. But, the liberals, I mean, there was Nicholas Kristof for a while. I don't think he writes for them anymore.
Right.
It does seem like the New York Times is like increasingly like this sort of neoconservative, like centrist paper.
or a neoliberal. I think that would be the more accurate.
The best, the better. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's of course, oh, it's definitely, but there's none of, there's no like fire breathing liberals left.
No,
it used to be like that. Like they used to have that represented, but now it seems like they're all these like. Like all those columns.
They're consensus liberals.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I mean, and by consensus liberal, I mean Jew. Like the only people that have a consensus, the only people that will go out there and say that everything is fine and great and the future is bright are Jews. Steve Pinker, well, Jordan Peterson isn't one, but, you know. I mean, it's very hard to tell. I mean, where they might disagree is like on tax rates or something.
Yeah, but that's – yeah, but they don't even really discuss that stuff anymore. They discuss like socially managing the future United States as a multicultural place.
Yes, and that's why, you know, the paywall – because, you know, the New York Times is unprofitable no matter what they do.
Yeah.
So the paywall isn't just about money. I think it's also to exclude the regular people from the national debate because the New York Times is not – a niche paper, right? It's not like the Village Voice or something. The New York Times is the paper of record, supposedly, and 90% of people can't access it. So what does that tell you? It tells you that the elites are getting comfortable with closing the white masses out from the debate.
Yeah.
Now they're comfortable in openly doing a Jew for Jew debate, a Jew for Jew technocracy, where the white masses are just totally irrelevant. Oh, you voted for Donald Trump and closed borders? So what? Where's your army? Oh, you voted for Brexit? Where's your army?
Yeah.
Where's your billionaire to actually influence policy? So they've actually gotten comfortable in the people voting for something very specific, and these leaders and elites simply go, oh, well, I'm just going to ignore this and pretend you didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, Brexit is egregious. Like, it's just not going to happen. And it's like, wait, what the fuck?
Oh, Boris Johnson is a fucking disaster. He really is Trump.
Yeah.
Was it dollar store, pound store Trump?
Yeah.
He really is. He's going to give every baboon and Arab that has stepped on British soil illegally amnesty. He's talking about doing that. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did. And he talked about that as soon as he was confirmed by the Queen or whatever the hell they do over there. But like, that was in his initial speech as PM. He started talking about like amnestying illegal immigrants. And it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But so back to this topic about the elites being more closed off in their own little world. And so one of the results of that is that when there are articles about us, it's always about here's an idea of how we can manage these people. And so we wanted to talk about this article that came up on the opinion page by somebody named Tara Isabella Burton, who's a contributing editor. This is a guest column. Contributing editor at The American Interest and a columnist at Religion News Service. And I'm assuming she's some kind of Christian.
Yeah.
And she says, the religious hunger of the radical right, until we understand what really drives extremists, we will not be able to stop them.
Right.
And the theory, basically, she lays out, talks a lot about El Paso. She lays out the theory that basically... What white nationalists are looking for is some kind of religious experience, a church. And now, they're not wrong in this, in making this analysis that a lot of people go to white nationalism to feel a part of something bigger than themselves, feel part of a community, a group, have brotherhood and all those things. But my question is, like, if you understand that, and you know that this is something that young white men want, or young men generally, but young white men particularly, because young white men are particularly denied it.
Yes.
Why are you fucking with it? Like, why not just leave? Why not just leave us alone and let us form our communities?
Right.
Like, what the fuck? Like, this is the thing. It's like the thing is, the reason they congregate in groups with a common purpose is because they're looking for a group with a common purpose. So why not let us have it?
So I started seeing articles like this. So let me just preface this. I'm not a fedora. I'm not a Shrek fedora. I respect everyone's religious beliefs as long as, you know, it doesn't, you know, cause sectarianism.
Well, I don't respect Jews' religious beliefs.
Okay, obviously. I'm talking about, like, whites, right?
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah.
Jew is not a religious belief. It's a strategy for racial preservation. That's very different.
Yeah.
But anyway, just to preface it, this is not if you find some kind of inspiration in religion, more power to you. It's not about this. What this is about is how some of these people are using institutional churches or you know, existing organized religion, they're talking about using that as a way to depoliticize whites. And I'll tell you when this started. This started in 2017 when they were pouring over the people that voted for Donald Trump, right?
Yes.
Because they were shocked by it, and they also want to make sure it never happens again.
Yeah, so they want to understand what happened.
Right. So here's Peter Beinart, or Beinart, or whatever his name is. He's a Jew.
He's a Jew, yeah.
He's a Jew. He's writing for The Atlantic. This is in 2017. And he notes from the data that the people that drove Donald Trump to victory were not necessarily evangelicals. It was something called religiously unaffiliated Republicans.
Right.
So these are people that may be cultural Christians, but they're not, you know, evangelical Protestants, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're not David French is an evangelical Protestant. You know, the National Review is covered in trad Catholic, all types of stuff. They promote it very actively. I just saw National Review, they have a thing about the Knights of Columbus where they're promoting it and so on. So this is a very different audience than the traditional Republican voter since Ronald Reagan.
And it's also going to be a more working class type white audience. Like, it's because, like, actually church attendance and affiliation is more like people, like, there's this myth of the low class, like, church going toothless redneck, whatever. It's not true. It tends to be higher status white people that are still affiliated with the church in one way or another, which doesn't mean, like, whether that, like, I don't know the correlation and the causation here, which way that would go. I think it's because these are people that can still afford to maintain some semblance of an intact life. And so they can also maintain church attendance and giving to a church or whatever, where working class whites are less and less capable of doing that. So
Ross Douthat at the New York Times, this guy is obviously he's derided at the New York Times because he's sort of like a center right neoliberal. And ever since 2000,
but he's also one. He's the token goy, and he's somewhat sympathetic,
right,
to the right and to our, like, he doesn't write with vitriolic hatred when he talks about us. And the funny thing is, who is it that, if you ever listen to Chapo Trap House, who is it they go hardest against?
Yeah,
it's Ross Douthat. It really is. Now I've also called him douche hat, and, like, I don't particularly like him, but I don't hate him vitriolically. I just find him to be kind of silly. But anyway.
Yeah, so Ross Douthat was really, they even refer to it as the Douthat hypothesis in some articles, and what he was saying in 2016 was that all the New York Times liberals that were celebrating the death of Christianity in America should watch out.
Yes.
Here's a quote from the Peter Beinart article. This debate was really kicking off in 2017, but it's returning now. It says here, this is from Beinart. For decades, liberals have called the Christian right intolerant. When conservatives disengage from organized religion, however, they don't become more tolerant. They become intolerant, just in different ways. Whatever the reason, when cultural conservatives disengage from organized religion, they tend to redraw the boundaries of identity, de-emphasizing morality and religion and emphasizing race and nation. Trump is a beneficiary and a driver of that shift. So is the alt-right. This is in 2017.
Yeah, and that's just because they found among Trump voters, people that voted for Trump, they surveyed them, and they found that those that had no religious affiliation and didn't go to church were more racist, frankly, were more nationalistic.
Yes, and I think part of that, it's not necessarily entirely – I mean, I know we're going to get some, you know, the Nietzschean types are going to say, well, that's because Christianity is universalist. It makes perfect sense. I think there might be more to it. I think it might be that people that are more urban tend to be less religious. People in the Rust Belt, they're not as religious as people in the South. Things like that. I mean, what
well,
do you
also,
think?
Well, I also think that the church has incorporated liberalism into their ministry and liturgy, and which is another reason that people left. So, actually, Second City Bureaucrat had a very interesting very interesting tweet today where he said, actually, secular liberals have potent religious symbols that actually the church can't really match up to in the present day, of potent symbols of sin, sacrifice, and redemption in slavery and the Holocaust.
Yes.
And so that's why we get that stuff all the time, and we get it all the time from the media, and we get it all the time in education. And in order to kind of keep up with the Joneses or whatever, I mean, certainly mainline Protestantism completely was sucked into this. So mainline Protestantism is dead, and the only reason it survives is wealthy donors and real estate that the churches own that right. keeps them alive. They're not getting their congregations are almost nothing. Like their attendance is a joke. You get like 10 people on a Sunday, maybe. So mainline Protestantism is dead in terms of a congregation, a community, a body. There's no body there, but there is some money and property left over. So they're kind of lurching along. And of course, it's all been taken over by homosexuals, and it's all being essentially all that property is going to be cannibalized yeah. by these homosexuals. But that incorporation of that kind of secular liberalism destroyed those churches. And to the extent Christianity does that, it destroys itself. And the people that then stay affiliated stay because they don't mind that as much. So, like, how can you be an evangelical Presbyterian, which is, I believe, what David French is, or an evangelical Lutheran, in this day and age? Because if you ever have you gone to a Presbyterian or Lutheran church, it is the most... It is unbelievably paused and socially liberal to the point beyond.
So if you live in a place with few Jews, the pause, the embassies of pause with the gay flags,
are the
outside,
Protestant churches.
It's the prot churches.
Yeah,
those are the emissaries of Globo Homo. If you live in the middle of the country, in many cases, obviously not all, but in the cities, especially where there are churches, you'll get the refugees. So it's a 1-2 punch. The prot churches do the faggot shit. And the Catholic churches do the immigration stuff, where they say refugees welcome, right?
Prot churches do the refugee stuff too, and Catholic churches. There's been a few attempts to have like gay Catholic stuff go on, and there's like a few people out there trying to do it. It doesn't really take off because the community puts it down, but there are a few attempts, but it's not successful. But yeah. But the thing the Catholics do is they say, like, yeah, because it's like the body of Christ, the race doesn't matter. And then, of course, they try and get a lot of Mexicans in because I guess they feel like the dwindling numbers in the pews, the whites, they can replace with Mexicans. But it's like, why not just try and appeal to whites again?
Right.
And the way you do that is, frankly, honestly, you preach fire and brimstone. You have to preach sin and redemption in a way that isn't just copying liberalism.
Yeah. Well, why? Well, what I always tell Catholics is, why should I get up early on Sunday when I can get the same sermon on Netflix on Saturday?
Exactly.
Night?
And it's even worse. Even worse with Protestantism.
Yeah.
It's like exactly. You can turn on the TV or go to the movies, and it's the same message.
Right. Exactly. I think that this is a very it's very interesting though that I don't know if you've noticed, but there have been some Supreme Court victories for, quote, religious liberty in the last since Trump got elected. Furthermore, there is, you know, I'm not saying that if you want to embrace traditionalism, that this is bad, but there is a fine line between that and LARPing. Right. I mean, we were talking about this the other day, like all traditions are invented by people who broke with tradition. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that no tradition remains absolutely pure. I mean, the Catholic Church probably has the longest running record in terms of its dogma. Even Adolf Hitler admitted that. He said that the one good thing about the Catholic Church is that it never revised its doctrine, right? Mm-hmm. But that obviously changed after the war. I mean, some Jew
it
maybe
did, it ultimately did. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Vatican II, right?
And it was conversos. Literally, I mean, people think, "Oh, you guys never let up on the Jews." The conspiracy. It's like, dude, it was literally converted Jews that did that.
Yes, exactly. So you know, this is something that they may seem as, again, a way to let you escape, because they would much rather let you escape than confront them, right?
Well, the other thing is this. I have noticed that when you look at official elite liberalism and media and stuff like coming out of those circles, the anti-Christian stuff is way, way toned down.
Yeah,
like, you don't see it at all anymore.
Do
now,
you remember 10 years ago?
I remember the '90s, dude. Do you remember the '90s? Yeah. Oh my God! Like liberalism in the '90s and the '80s. Forget about it. The '80s, there was actually a somewhat ascendant movement of the moral majority and all that crap. And then the reaction to that from liberals and boy, it was vitriolic. And you don't see that anymore. And in Beinart, it kind of hits the nail on the head as to why. And it's sort of funny when you, if you're on Twitter or on Facebook and you see some posts by like a liberal cat lady who's like 20 years behind and is like still using the talking points from Bill Maher like in the 90s or the early 2000s and such, talking about Christianity this, Christianity that. And it's like, you obviously like haven't upgraded, you know, this firmware was installed by Jews in your brain in like 1995 and hasn't been upgraded. and so you're still like going on and on about Christ. It's really funny when you see older liberals. Boomer liberals are, by the way, just as fucking stupid as boomer conservatives.
Oh, absolutely.
And just as set in their ways and just as dogmatic and fucking retarded. And
like Michael Moore, he's a great example of a boomer.
Michael Moore would still, because he's so dumb and he's, you know, he's really dumb and he's like the boomer liberal. He would go out there and he would talk about evil, racist, hateful, intolerant, anti-gay Christians when like the Jews are like, Michael, guy, we moved on. We're not doing that.
I can't tell if it's that the churches have ultimately bent the knee to them. You know, because it's not that they hate Christianity for what they hate is Christianity as a means for white resistance against liberalism.
And that's
so
what,
I'm
that's,
not sure if it's that or if it's just the fact that like they've won.
You know? I think it's that they've won and they know that most churches have bent the knee, and the purpose of the anti-Jewish stuff against the Jewish anti-Christian stuff from previous eras, even recently though, was, I think, rooted in they didn't feel in control of these congregations. They felt that they were potentially reactionary forces that would turn on liberalism. They were extremely anti-homosexual, and that was a big part of the agenda there. And they were nervous about it. And you know, a lot of the other thing is, I blame a lot of those leaders because you know, Billy Graham. There's secret recordings of him.
Oh yeah,
talking about the Jews.
Yeah,
and then you know, and those are from like the 70s, and all of a sudden Billy Graham has got nothing to say on the topic, and now he's a Zionist.
Yeah,
and so he was just co-opted, and you know, they're like, oh, you know, George W. Bush like said Billy Graham was like his spiritual guide or something, and then it's like, and George W. Bush is like the most pro Zionist.
Another thing to bring up very quickly, and this is me. So we've already hit the trads and whatever, but I also will criticize the people that scapegoat Christianity entirely for the decline of the West. You know, look at black churches. Black churches practice identity politics, right? So clearly, this is something that's only walled off for whites to practice. Whites in white churches practicing identity politics is only walled off for whites. So you don't see, you know, the people in black churches, like if you're white and you go to a black Protestant church, they'll be nice to you because, you know, that's the normal thing. But they're not going out of their way to adopt white children and bring them into the church, right? They're not going out of their way to recruit white people to the black church.
They'll do their like black church thing where they like the preacher gets up there and he's like, God gonna give you an ass whooping, and then all the ladies are like, oh Lord, and then they all dance the gospel music
all
and
you
stuff.
Youngins out there,
yeah, and
all you youngins with your pants around your ankles
with your hippity hop.
What are you telegraphing to the world, man?
Yeah. Pull your pants up, nigga. I say,
telegraphing? Are you DL on the down low?
No, they do. It's really black preachers. I'll tell you what. I understand on some level why white people like this stuff. It is hilarious watching them. And the thing is, then you get the awkward liberal whites that go into these areas. and they try, like, you ever see videos like the liberal whites are trying to clap along as the blacks are like dancing to the black gospel music and such, and it's just like, yeah. Just stop, okay, just stop. This is cringe. And
do you remember? You know what's funny too is that the Democrats try and use this to own the Democrats. I mean, sorry, the Republicans try to use this to own the Democrats. Like, remember when Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris went to the Baptist Church in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago?
No, but I mean, I can only imagine.
Yeah, they went there, and the pastor, he's a guy named Robert Fowler. He's a black reverend, mm-hmm. and he's very anti-gay. Like, he's very easy against homosexuality.
Yes.
Like, homosexuals, adulterers, fornicators, all sins addressed in the scripture. And Bernie Sanders, like, shared a platform with this guy or some shit, and they're going after him. But guess what? It has no effect. But it just shows you what kind of peanut brain fucking...
Well, it's the same thing with freaking Obama and Jeremiah Wright and all that shit. And, like, and it's just like, it doesn't...
There is no unit small enough to measure a conservative's brain. Because this is... So you have the power to challenge these cultural issues. You know, if you want to win the black vote, why don't you go to that church and tell the people what the pastors tells them?
Yeah, just say the same thing. Like, what? Like, say the same thing to them.
Exactly. Go there and be like, no, I agree with the pastor. We hate queers, and we're going to ban homosexual marriage and so on. Like, go there and do that if you're that interested in the black vote. You know, I mean, so it just shows you, like, you can't either. They're not falling for it. They're diving. It's very different.
Yeah.
Right wingers are not as. I mean, those skeezy little nerds. Like, I get this little nerd in my YouTube channel when I see ads. Have you seen this nerd? Epoch Times, Epic Times.
I think I've seen that before, but remind me.
He's a little nerd, and he runs this newspaper, which is started as some kind of CIA front to fight the Chinese, the Chi-Coms.
Oh, God.
And it's like this weird, stupid newspaper that just gives you generic right-wing talking points. And it's like this nerd. He's like, I'm going to tell you the real story about Russiagate and all this stuff. But, you know, guys like that, they know what they're doing. They're not dumb. You know, when they look like they're falling for something, it's because they're taking a dive. And this is a great example. But, you know, back to the religious stuff. Like, again, this is to distract you and give you a sense of community in a church. But the problem is that if you drop out of politics and hide inside your church, you are disengaging from the temporal world. That's not what God wants you to do. Right?
It's also not going to work, in my opinion. But we were talking about this New York Times article. Basically, the thesis is the alt-right, these white nationalists, and of course, the author characterizes us all as terrorists, saying we won't be able to stop these terrorists unless we do this, that, or whatever. And it's kind of along those similar lines of, like, understanding Muslim terrorism or whatever, or people that pretended to understand it or whatever. But the point is that, so don't even worry about the fact that everyone's characterized as, like, a terrorist. Like, that's just how they're going to talk about it. But, like, what she's saying isn't entirely wrong, but I think the problem is it's like too late, because if you don't, one, I think that while it's true there is the sense of community and belonging and stuff that is something that people are looking for. The other thing is, well, why don't we have it? How did it go away? What role did the church itself play in that? And what role can the church play in offering it back? And I have known groups, alt-right groups, and I've gone around the country and I've visited people in their local groups and stuff. Obviously, these are just groups of friends that hang out. And some of them are like, oh, yeah, we go to church. We made a thing where we want the guys to go to church every weekend. And so we go in and they go to church. And I've gone to a few churches with some of these groups. And let me tell you, what they're preaching from the pulpit, the guys afterwards are like, what the fuck? Why are we coming here? They're like, this guy is telling us to go build shelters in Guatemala. Like, that's not what we're about.
But
and
they
then,
don't even tell you to build shelters in your own
community. Right. Like, they're not even, they don't even tell you to do it for blacks. They tell you to, and of course, that's partly because, like, a lot of these churches see that as fertile recruiting grounds, because you go down to these fucking Indians in Guatemala, these fucking natives, literal, not mixed with any total, Europeans, total and you just tell them, whoever the first missionary that gets there, like, yeah, we'll convert to that. Now, where's the food and stuff you promised us?
Exactly. Yeah. In exchange for they'll give you the Bible and say, if you pretend to read this book, we'll build you schools, we'll build you infrastructure, we'll get you clean water, we'll get you food, we'll get you, you know, in some cases, they get them even more stuff, like cars and shit. Yeah. So, obviously, I mean, that is so opportunistic, but, you know, it is what it is. The point is, though, is that, you know, the church has given up on intellectually winning debates and intellectually pursuing and persuading people into their church. Now it's basically going right to your gut, right? And that's why they have thrown aside, essentially neglect their own communities, even the blacks and the non-whites, unless they're illegal aliens. Man, you got to see some of these churches fighting over illegal aliens, man. I remember seeing one time there was a Protestant church, and they used to host indoor soccer tournaments in their church just to get illegal Mexicans to go to the church.
Yeah.
And they were successful. You know, they would have them go in there, and they would play their soccer and so on, and then they recruit them. And, of course, with some of these Protestant churches, you have a grifter that takes 10% of your salary. So not only do illegal aliens get on all these government benefits, they get free schooling, they get free, in many cases, a lot of social services. But on top of that, you have private churches taking 10% of their salary. What about the taxpayer? What about us? What about us?
Yeah.
Why don't they pay into our system that we all share? You know, I mean, this is just a preposterous thing. But the thing is that, yeah, that what they're trying to do is simulate community and civic engagement. But it's a ruse.
It's okay? And it's never, like, I think that's why I also think it's not going to work, for the same reason. Like, we did, Alex and I did a long segment yesterday on Tedious. I recommend people listen to, where we talked about that woman who talked about engaging with your, how to engage with your sons if they're viewing alt-right content on Twitter. There's some liberal fucking cat lady woman talks. She's like, if you have teenage white sons, listen up. You remember that thing?
Yeah.
And so we did a long segment on that, and why, like, ultimately, when reading through that, the mother's ideas about the alt-right themselves and her own liberal prejudices and her own views just, like, remain dominant the whole time, and there was no attempt to understand why it might be that your kid is like laughing at Pepe's and Happy Merchants online,
right?
And like also understanding that, like, your teenage white sons are being targeted. Like, this is the thing you have to understand. So if you have a bunch of white men who have picked up on the fact that they're being systematically targeted, that they are legally discriminated against, that if you check white, as you're talking about, if you check white in the race box on any college or job application, you might as well just walk right to the back of the line.
Right.
You know, you might as well just walk right to the back of the fucking line. You're being legally discriminated against.
That's what Ross Douthat was talking about. He was putting out there a bit of an anecdote that he got from a school administrator, where he said that his highly Christian themed, like, I think it was like a private Lutheran school. He said that the kids there were eagerly embracing white nationalism. Well, the reason for that is that they're not being attacked for being Lutherans or Christians. They're being attacked for being white.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if the Jews' number one enemy was truly Catholicism, well, they wouldn't be for importing all of Mexico into America. You know, yeah. I mean, think of it logically. Mexicans are far more, I mean, they're growing increasingly secular now, but they're far more religious.
Well, I think the other issue is, I'm not saying it right now, the Jews feel they have the Catholic Church under control. There have been times when they did not, and they did see Catholics as a big time threat, and the Catholic Church is a big time threat. That is not how they feel now. They feel that they have this institution under control. And Protestant Christianity is completely gay. It's two kinds. It's either the completely liberal, secularist, gay version, which is all homosexual, which has very few adherents, or they've got Christian Zionism. like, which is very popular on the evangelical side. So they don't really care about either of the, any of those sects. And then there's the Catholicism, which I guess they just feel like they've got that under control enough with, you know, pedo scandals and threats of pedo scandals and things like that. That they, they'll, of course, reveal. I mean, you hear more about a random priest than you'll ever hear about Jeffrey Epstein.
Right.
But which is not to say that that's not a problem that the church has consistently had. But
you're just as likely or more likely to be molested in a school by your teacher as you are in a church. So the selective coverage of that is malicious.
Yes, Catholics do have a point about that, which is, again, not to excuse any actual incidences of it, because when there are incidences of it that come out, it's systematic and it's whatever. Hold on,
but you know, yesterday we saw Pink News celebrating a couple with a gay couple with a 33-year-old difference, where they met when one of the men was like 40 years old and his boy lover was 16, and they're still together. And this was being celebrated by Pink News. This is fags celebrating this.
Dude, it was unbelievable. And the thing, what it was like, okay, so it's like these two twinks. It's just the gay guy and his twink. Yeah. He's 55. The lover is 24. And they met when one guy was 49 and the other guy was 16. And they're openly saying this. And the funniest thing is the replies was a lot of people came in, and not just alt-right people, but just like normal people on Twitter were just like with like puke emojis and like barf emojis, or like Homer Simpson putting bleach in his eyes. You know what I mean? Stuff like all kinds of memes like that. And then you had some LGBT activist people, particularly women. That was something I noticed. Mostly women in LGBT activist circles. And who knows if they're actually gay or not, or if they're just like signally shitlib women. We're like, please delete this. This is bad optics, basically. So the optics cucking. There's the optics cucks. They had like an optics war. And then they had like gay men come in and be like, what are you talking about? This is like all gay relationships are like this. What's wrong with it? And some guy's like, every gay relationship has almost 20 years of differences between the partners. And it's like, all right. Which is something I knew. I mean, Milo said as much.
It was – well, here's the thing. That was common knowledge all the way back to Greek times.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the thing – the only people in all of human history that have ever thought fags or anything other than pederasts are liberal women in the 21st century that don't know many faggots. Like, that's literally the only demographic that ever thought different. So they've pulled the wool over people's eyes. But this is the blip in history. There is so much stuff out there in this world of lies, like, and illusions.
Now that
thanks
this
to Hollywood, that they tell you, they totally uproot your correct instincts on things. Your first instinct on a lot of things is usually the right one. Okay? And we all know facts. I mean, you could go back to the 1950s and see black and white public service announcements where they tell young men, be like, hey, if you're a teenage boy, watch out for that man in the car. He may give you a ride, and he may be all kind and polite, but if he starts to touch your leg, that's when you know you're in trouble. Go and reach, find an adult, tell a teacher, you know?
Yeah. They used to do this. They used to tell, even in the 80s, they had, like, don't talk to strangers, and they had episodes of, like, they had an episode of Different Strokes where Arnold and Willis, like, you know, the bike shop, the guy with the bike shop?
Yeah.
And so, and of course, they present that as a different issue than homosexuality, but that's just post hoc propaganda. It's just not true. Like, it's the same issue. But I think the point we were driving at here is that the elite sees giving you a fake kind of a religion as like, now this woman doesn't really propose like how you get people that are in our thing into religion. But I do think that there might be efforts to do this that are going on. And it's not to say, which is not to say, like, watch out for religion or whatever. I would say watch out for religion that attempts to depoliticize.
Right.
If it's like, if it's somebody telling you be religious and stop caring about these things, particularly stop caring about Jews. Because remember, E. Michael Jones, who we had on the program a couple of weeks ago, he's not part of any of this because there's no way that what he preaches would be acceptable, even whatever religious theological differences you might have with him. What he talks about Jews is very accurate, and so for
he does whatever people might say about him, he does far more harm to them than any good.
Yeah, and he would never be included in any kind of scheme they would do to try and depoliticize the alt-right, because even if he says things like, oh, I'm German and Irish, I'm not really white, which I almost laughed out loud. But that's but that's just like, all right, whatever, we're playing now we're just playing with words, but like
Go read Slaughter of Cities. That is a book where he essentially says that he was driven out of his community by black migration.
If race isn't real, like then that doesn't happen, right?
I don't want to waste time fighting with E. Michael Jones.
No, there's no reason to fight with him. That was our point in that at the end of the show was like, we have differences, but there's really no reason for us to be fighting. Like wouldn't it be wonderful if we had the world where that was the fight?
Yeah,
where the fight was Striking Mike versus E. Michael Jones, and that was the issue that people had to deal with.
Right? I know. But now, on the other hand, the American conservative types, AMCON, those guys, watch out. Okay? Those guys are shills. Guys like Rod Dreher, he's a shill, right? These are the people that went and
Rich Lowry is trying to get in on this crap now, too. But yeah.
Who?
Rich Lowry.
Oh, Rich Lowry is does he still work for the National Review?
Yeah, but he's been doing some half-assed immigration pieces recently that are just like
really. Did you read his article from 3 days ago where he says the FBI crushed the Klan? Now it's time to target white nationalists.
Yeah, but then like he's pairing that up with like, here, I can understand some anxiety over immigration, and the problem is, like, markets aren't free enough. And he said, like, absurdly. And see, then the thing is, what happens is, liberals, like, easily dismantle this shit. And they're like, there, we beat the immigration arguments.
Right.
And it's like, because he's like, when immigrants, the wave of immigration between, like, 1870 and 1914 or whatever, 1870, 1920, whatever, that wave of immigration. It's like the reason the United States could deal with that was markets were freer and there was no welfare state. And it was like, first of all, it wasn't all hunky-dory. That wave of immigration did cause a lot of problems and social tension. Also coupled with the Industrial Revolution, child labor, all kinds of industrial conflicts, unions, and industrialists, poverty, the Gilded Age, and all the abuses of workers and such, there was some ethnic conflict, but it was, I would say, ethnic conflict was lower on the scale because everybody was white. But there was some ethnic conflict, not a lot. It's overblown today because they want to tell you like, people said Catholics aren't white and stuff like that, and Irish and Italian aren't white, and that's kind of bullshit. Yeah. But, so I think the ethno-religious aspect of that was less problematic than the sort of industrial labor struggles that were going on, which were the country was convulsing from that. But he's saying, essentially, and it's almost like he's saying, like, he's trying to do the bait and switch with conservatives of like, well, just end the welfare state then. If you want the immigration. Yeah.
They're trying to spin you back around to where you started.
Yeah, he's saying, like, that's equal. But ultimately, for him, it's equally desirable. Like, he doesn't even want the immigration cuts. He wants the welfare state cut. And he's saying, like, you're going to have this. He's even trying to trick liberals. He's like, you're going to have this anxiety about immigration if you have the welfare state. Because now, there is research that suggests that people are less willing to engage in welfare state taxation for welfare state funding in a multicultural, multiracial society. That's true. But the answer then is we should have racial nationalist communities. It's not...
Right. I mean, it's also been proven that white people are less likely to send their kids to the public school if it's multicultural.
Right.
So is the answer to just abolish school? Like, you just want to do libertarian, away with school?
Libertarians,
I mean, it's a stupid fucking argument.
Libertarians would say yes, but that just shows you libertarians ultimately they default to, well, just destroy the institution.
Yeah,
itself.
Just have nothing there. Just do nothing.
Yeah, yeah. And then
there's a problem. Well, just ignore.
Just don't do stuff.
Exactly. But that's my point.
Smoke weed.
Multicultural societies always lead back to liberalism because it's impossible to govern multicultural societies full of different people with different interests, different behaviors, different abilities. They don't even want to be in the same country.
No.
Like, you know, you go to these neighborhoods, they want to live amongst themselves while also enjoying the infrastructure white people create.
That's the thing. It's like they don't want to be with white people. A lot of them don't really like white people. And they resent. What happens is they resent the fact that they kind of have to pretend to in public life because whites are the majority and they still want to be here taking advantage of the economic benefits. So then they grow even more resentful, and that's where you get white privilege crap and all that shit.
So they come here for the infrastructure that we create. So I guess the libertarian and conservative solution to that is to just not have any infrastructure.
You'll find a libertarian that will argue that. All be private. That way you don't have to worry about it.
That way no one builds it. Okay. As if,
or like, just everyone has their own private infrastructure. And that way, like, whatever, then there's no conflict. Basically, their idea is like privatization of everything reduces the interpersonal conflict that is created by socialized resources.
Oh, great.
That's essentially ultimate. And that argument will ultimately lead you to just pure, like, we don't live in a society anymore. Like Mad Max.
It leads you to mass shootings and
what
we have now. I mean, that's how we got here. It's that mentality. Right. That mentality has been gaining ground. Again, the conservatives have been winning. Just not on any of our issues.
Yeah.
They take dives on our issues. But when it comes to the plutocratic ones, like deregulation, I mean, guess what? Now we got like there's some toxic fucking chemical, some pesticide, proven without any reasonable doubt that it causes all kinds of cancer and disease. And Donald Trump's government is now letting people use it to spray broccoli. So, you know, I'm sure that when you voted for Donald Trump, you voted for cancer causing broccoli, right? Because that's what his deregulation system is doing. So, and you know, it's funny too, Mike, is that it's not just the people like, Larry that are making that argument. I saw recently the Jew Aaron Friedman, a self-described socialist, was in the New Republic. He wrote, "Open borders made America great." And he romanticizes the Gilded Age, the time that you were talking about, where children were working in factories 16 hours a day and they would lose an arm and then be thrown out of the street and become homeless urchins. Armless homeless urchins. That was a very popular thing in the Gilded Age. I mean, you want to go back to that? And this is the socialist making that argument. No. Everything right or left is centered and calibrated around protecting the white genocide project. And then they turn around and call it a conspiracy theory.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, that's the problem. But it does seem like, I feel like this push of like, here, let's re-socialize alt-righters into these this or that kind of institution, I don't think it's going to work for the same reason like the progressive mom couldn't ever understand her sons, because she just doesn't want to actually. I mean, she was like, my sons are fine, but your sons, you white women, you white moms out there, listen. Because your sons are probably a mess. My sons are great. But anyway.
I think also the strategy is that, and also the strategy is to have these anti-racist speakers. Like, what is it? Like, yeah. Just by the way, everyone, Jeff Scope.
That shit never works.
Jeff Scope from the National Socialist Movement is now a motivational speaker against racism.
That's such a joke, dude.
He's always been a terrible speaker to begin with.
Well, he's never really even spoken. I've never even heard him speak. He's like a retard.
Speeches, and they're fucking terrible. They've always been terrible. But yeah, he's gone that route probably to make a little money. I doubt he's changed. The man has been doing this since he was like 17.
He was the commander of the NSM for 25 years. Now all of a sudden he's a committed anti anti-racist liberal. Like, get out of here. It's, and, like, literally nobody believes it. I don't even... It's like, he started a Twitter account for this, too, and he's, like... He's got, like, one follower. The tweets, to the extent, like, only time anyone looks is if a white nationalist calls attention to it, and then everyone goes and makes fun of him. Like, it's... It was clearly... The thing I'll be interested to see if he gets dropped from Sines versus Kessler. If he if he gets dropped from that case, I'll be looking out for that. And then...
Yeah, this
is part of a deal. This is not, like, any kind of genuine... And the other thing is, I was even speculating that... Jeff Scoop is not going to. He didn't convert anyone to Nazism, so why would he be? Why would he be able to convert anybody to this? Right? Like he couldn't convert like people that were already alt right, but just like not quite into that milieu. Dude,
there's millions of new people becoming racially aware, and the NSM just shrank. During this period.
Yeah, exactly. So clearly they're doing...
They were bigger 10 years ago than they are now. Much bigger. So, I mean, this is, you know, this is fucking just hilarious. And all these people, Joshua Bates, that's another guy. Remember, all the guys that go out there, and not all, but some of them that go out there and they try to be more extreme than thou, more virtuous than thou. You know, I remember one of these guys, I won't name him in case he tries to sue me, but I won't name him. But one of these... Antifa motivational speakers going out there that suddenly had a change of heart. He used to attack me. I was in a group with him a few years ago. I was in the central board of the executive board of a group making decisions and so on. And this guy was on it too. And the topic of Breivik came up. And I'm like, well, what did Breivik accomplish? Like, and second, like, what do you think the white masses of Norway think of a man who one day goes and just shoots a bunch of teenagers for, like, even if it is for political reasons? The vast majority of emotionally healthy people in Norway didn't support that, including the Nazis. Like, even people in the Nordic resistance movement think it was fucked up. So, you know, anyway, this same asshole who's selling out his friends, and it's not Jeff Scoop, it's another guy. Jeff Scoop, for whatever his flaws, isn't doing that. It's another guy who's out there who sold out all of his friends and is now framing himself as an anti-racist activist and all that. That guy used to come after me for not getting on board with his stupid shit, his dumb fucking more extreme than thou kind of siege kind of stuff. You know, he was always coming after me, right? So,
dude, I'm telling you, man.
Now an Antifa.
The more clownish and theatrical people are with this, the more likely they'll end up doing some dumb shit for the SPLC later on. It's just, I'm not saying everybody, but it's like the pattern I've seen is that the people that don't really change how they dress, how they behave, how they talk, and have just incorporate these ideas into their worldview and start talking about it as like a normal person, the person they always were. That's the people that are more staunch about it than people that try to adopt a kind of a fake over the top radical identity change. You know what, you understand what I'm saying? It's like, it's like, and not that all of those people are going to end up turning for the SPLC,
but it's
just, those are the people remain unconvincing.
No. Well, like, the people that turn for the SPLC are actually a different demographic. It's not the real extreme. People that do it for the SPLC are usually reactionaries, like Katie McHugh. Yeah. It's those people that are reactionaries. And remember the history lesson here. We're taking the reactionaries always stab you in the back. They are fair weather friends. Look at the king in Italy. Look at the Prussian aristocrats in Nazi Germany. Every damn time, it's the reactionaries who, unfortunately, too many nationalists and radicals will placate them because of the prestige that they bring, right? Katie McHugh had a lot of prestige. She was a known Breitbart columnist and so on. And people, they sucked up to her because of this. And now she's going out there putting people in danger. She's ruining lives, hurting
people. And she's doing it. And it was because that prestige was removed.
Exactly.
She lost the Breitbart position. There's no reason for anybody to kiss her ass anymore and try and use her as a connection with white nationalism and Breitbart. Oh, getting our ideas out there in this big publication and blah, blah, blah. That was gone. Never so now what happens? She goes right to Rosie Gray with literally everything she ever had. It's fucking disgraceful. No honor, but it's, you know.
That's how reaction.
And I don't even want to make a comment on women because there's decent women out there. There's good women. So it's like not even that. It's just, it's like.
Yeah.
It's
no,
something else,
no, but- no. Let's be fair. I'll say something. Yes, women. Listen, women get their heart broken or they get vengeful and they act like assholes. Very true. But not all women have vaginas. There are women out there who are physically male, just like the tranny third gender, just like Judith Butler says. One of them, I don't know if we should name him. Should we name the trad Catholic that allegedly talked Katie McHugh into doxing people? Should we name him?
Well, everybody knows who that is.
Yeah, it's P.T. Carlo.
Yes.
P.T. Carlo, an NRX faggot. Who some fucking trad calf faggot who was trying to reposition himself as a depoliticizer, as a neoconservative that would destroy the alt-right. He was once adjacent to the alt-right, and then he turned around and stabbed everyone in the back. This is the person that talked Katie McHugh into doing this stuff.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
This is the person, and he did it because, if I recall correctly from what I've heard, Katie McHugh was living with him. And, you know, if you have that kind of relationship with a woman, I don't know what the extent of their relationship is, women will often follow you if you're a man.
Well, so behind every
solid man, there's often a great woman. And behind every shitty woman, there's oftentimes a really faggoty, vengeful, equally effeminate man.
Yeah. From my understanding of the situation, I don't want to say too much because I don't know, but what I do know is that yes, she lived in his house and she had no income and was reliant on him, and he also then wrote this article about destroying the sinful pagan idolatrous ideology of Nazism, even if you have to use liberalism to do it, because it is more evil than liberalism. And this was basically, a lot of people interpreted this as a job application to Conservatism, right. Inc., which was not accepted because he hasn't written anything in 10 months.
And you know what's funny? P.T. Carlo and was one of the first guys to come up with the Wignat stuff, like calling people Wignats. And he was also one of the first guys to revise Charlottesville as this huge defeat. It was P.T. Carlo. And a lot of people in that irony bro world come from the P.T. Carlo circles, like Thermidor. All those people that say, don't go outside. Don't go outside because the FBI will kill you if you go outside. A lot of those people, they come from that world. And just to backtrack to where we were before, what we were talking about, yes, people like P.T. Carlo, when they're preaching their trad Catholicism and telling you to stop engaging in politics because it's going to ruin your life and so, those people are malicious. They have bad intentions. Yeah. These are scumbags that have personal, financial, and political motives who are on working, whether knowingly or trying to work, at the behest of the Jew. Okay.
Yeah. So and when we see that there's articles and think pieces – elite to elite think pieces on this is a strategy, and then we see people that seem to be engaging in it. I mean, you can put two and two together as well as I can. I just, you know, I think, which is, again, want to be careful here because it's not like if you're a Christian, you're doing this. It's certainly not at all what I'm saying. I mean, it's not even like most. But it's like, it's just like, there is this element out there. And so I just think that when we do see, look, they're undoubtedly trying this. So if they're telling people they want to do this in something like the New York Times and a few other outlets, and then you see them trying to do it,
right?
Wow. I mean, it's also like we see them write articles about actively going and disrupting online spaces that people congregate in, and then you see accounts coming in and being disruptive.
Right.
Wow. Like, just yesterday, I saw some account come in and try and say some shit to me on Twitter. And he was bringing up old allegations that are long since done with. Like, no one real has said this to me in 2 years. So I go and look at this timeline, and it's all like celebrity gossip about Lady Gaga and shit. So I'm like, so I just blocked the person, but I'm like, who is this person? Is this some liberal that like took it upon themselves, or who knows what it is? But it's like, this is, you know,
what I find very interesting is that these kind of ironic Catholic types, they're always going around saying how stupid it is to care about politics anymore, how caring about politics will ruin your life. But then they take time out of their day to come on our social media and attack us. So you either care about this stuff or you don't.
Yes, you know? And frankly, really, people that are actually really religious don't behave like that. That's the other thing. So a person that's actually a real committed Christian doesn't really engage in that kind of behavior. You know what I mean? Yeah.
A person who's a committed Christian doesn't dox your girlfriend and then spread rumors that she's a Satanist. Okay.
Just right. I mean, I don't know. Is that like, did that happen to somebody?
Or? Yeah. They don't go around spreading calumnies about people, you know?
Yeah.
That's not a very Christian thing to do. Yeah, people like Matt Forney are a good example of that.
Yeah, so again, I don't like engaging in gossip drama and actually I don't always like naming the names. I'll name names of people in the elite and the Jewish world and things like that. But I don't want to turn this show into that kind of thing or engage in a feud that is going to be ongoing, but these are just some observations I've made, and we know, like, certainly we know that, which is, again, not to say all of 8chan was garbage, but we know that people like SPLC reporters and federal agents were actively using 8chan. That's just something that we know.
Yeah.
We have actual evidence of that. So we also know that if there's this thing out there, hey, let's use religion to depoliticize, and people coming in saying, don't be alt-right, be Christian. Well, maybe that's part of this.
I think, yeah, it doesn't have to be one or the other, but if someone is telling you it has to be one or the other, then you know that they're bad.
You know, there's obvious overlap between our views and things that social conservatives and religious conservatives and religious Christians want, right? And right now, you know, whatever the disagreements might be, wouldn't it be better to work with people that share your views on at least some things than stab each other in the back while a Jew sits and laughs?
Exactly.
You know, that just doesn't make sense. Like, there's always going to be minor disagreements among groups. And the other thing I'll say, what about it? What would there be about a white, a majority United States with the conservative social policy that would be incongruent with religious Christians? What about that?
Stronger back then or now?
Yeah, I mean, when were you stronger? You know, and so, like, what is it about? It's like, you know, the way that Christianity has operated in the liberal, since, you know, the Jewish liberal era of takeover of literally all the politics and institutions, has been like copes. Mm-hmm. They've gone from cope to cope of trying to maintain some semblance of themselves in the face of the Jewish onslaught. And Protestant mainline Christianity has destroyed itself. It's gone. And Catholicism has capitulated at Vatican II on social stuff, and has capitulated on immigration stuff. And I know that the right-wing Catholics I know, they're good ones, the ones I like and I'm friends with, they don't like this stuff. They don't like the current pope. Right. You know, and so it's, or they're forbidden from saying that, but they'll say, like, you know, we don't like this policy or whatever. Or a lot of times what they say is, like, the pope has no particular domain over that. That's a political policy. The Pope is his domain is spiritual stuff. So he can't say the country should open their borders, because that's not his calling. God never. So you can say he's wrong there. So I'm sort of like, okay, I can see what you're doing there. That's fine. Like, you know, this is where these are the kind of arguments theology takes you into. But I'm just like, whatever. Like, I get what you're saying. So it's like, yeah, the Pope is there to tell you how to save your soul, not to close your border or not to open your border, right? So, but yeah, like, that's But that's what I'm saying. Like, what would it be about the kind of country that we are trying to create, or that we are idealizing? And I mean, I don't think we'll see it in our lifetimes, but that we are idealizing an effort to build a movement towards that you would have a problem with. How would religion suffer under this? It wouldn't.
Yeah,
it would be good.
Yeah, I think so. I think also. All right, so I got to get going, Steve. But one last thing: what's your take on Molyneux?
Well, Molyneux retweeted me last night because he has been – Molyneux's been going hard, and not hard in a trivial way, hard on the JQ since Epstein, really. He's always danced around the issue and tiptoed around the issue. But so he found out about this movie, I think it's called Good Boys.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that.
Which is just a pile of trash. It's just a pile of trash, right? It's total garbage. It's about little kids. Of course, all multiracial little kids, and most of them are fat, making making gross jokes and like jokes about, like, I mean, it's not just like fart jokes or something. It's like really gross sexual stuff, like finding their parents' dildos and butt plugs and stuff like that. It's disgusting. Mm-hmm. It's eminently Jewish. And I had known that Seth Rogen was a producer of it. And Molyneux finds out about the movie. He retweets Robbie Starbuck talking about the movie. And then it's a Universal Pictures movie. So he does the whole, please don't have Universal Pictures president be Jewish. Please don't have Universal Pictures president be Jewish. Oh, dang. That's like his new meme, right? Yeah. And so I'm like, well, it's not just the president of Universal Pictures. Let's look at who is making the movie. And I can't remember. It was definitely, and I already knew that Seth Rogen was one of the producers. So I looked up who's making the movie, and sure enough, it's like Jewish director, four Jewish producers, and two Jewish screenwriters. I can't remember all their names. Seth Rogen being one of them. So I tweet that at Molly, and he retweets, and he's like, "Are you kidding me?" And I'm like, "I can't believe you're surprised." You know, like, and yeah, and then he tweeted an article from something called, like, the Jewish Telegraph, celebrating the movie and the directors of the movie and how Jewish they are.
Ugh.
And so it's like, yeah, look, this stuff isn't that hard. It's actually quite simple. That's why I think when people sometimes I think people, and right-wingers are prone to this, particularly intellectual ones, where they really complicated explanations for things and involved. It's like, no, it's just Jews, guy.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah,
I don't know what it's to not, tell you.
Yeah,
it's not that complicated, right?
It's not this tax credit that they give to movie makers. That's why it's
and
bad.
And also we say it's the cultural ennui created by the blah 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 blah. Like,
liberals.
It's like, no, it's just Jews, man. And yes, I agree with a lot of your other sort of symptomatic issues, but who's running this society? And who's creating these movies? And why would this be acceptable? Like, here we have...
Well, why is it allowed?
Yeah. Why are we allowing a movie? And the meme that Seth Rogen was going with in promoting the movie was, you're allowed... Because he had the actors, the child actors that were in the movie. And he's like, you're allowed to act in this movie... But because of the rating that the Motion Picture Association gave the movie, you're not allowed to watch it.
That was really funny, actually. It's true.
And I'm like, well, maybe you shouldn't have kids acting in a movie like this either, Seth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are you producing a movie with kids doing this? Because the MPAA...
watching porn, playing with dildos.
Yeah, his point was that the MPAA... It's like a relic. It's an artifact that we should do away with. That's essentially the point that Seth Rogen was trying to make there. And which he would like, because then he could just make all the degenerate, filthy movies that he wants.
And so would most of the conservatives now, too.
Well, it's
the libertarian wing of the right is truly a Senate. Like, a lot of people were saying, like, a lot of libertarians on Reason were saying, hey, how come no one looks to us in the culture war? No one's asking us for guidance. And one theory is that they've won. The libertarians have won on most cultural issues.
Yeah. It's because there's you're cultural liberals.
Right.
Like, Nick Gillespie is just a fucking liberal.
Right. He's a liberal that wants to see old people without health insurance die. Like, that's the only, like, that's really the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it is. I mean, you know, he used to ghostwrite a column where he pretended to be Alyssa Milano giving teen advice.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. I looked up his profile, his career profile the other day, and it's absolutely true. For Teen Magazine, he was an editor at Teen Magazine, and he ghost wrote a column where people would write, like teenage girls would write Alyssa Milano, and it was probably all written. They probably the letters were fake too, but teenage girls would supposedly write Alyssa Milano for advice, and then she would like give them advice, and that was Nick Gillespie.
Oh my god, yo, that's creepy.
I know, it really is. Actually, it's actually like, I actually don't. And when you look into Nick Gillespie, you get a creepy vibe from that guy already.
That's like Jessica Yaniv. You know about that, right?
Yeah.
And mentoring children, and then suddenly saying, "Hey, I'm wearing my pads right now." I menstruate just like you.
Oh yeah, yeah. And Jessica, I can't get in the pool because I'm having my period. It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
But last thing I wanted to hit Fredo for 1 minute before we go. I'm not dumb. I'm not dumb like they say, Mike. I'm smart. Why didn't Pop see me? Why didn't Pop see that I was smart? But, like, it is kind of true because Andrew Cuomo is, like, the hyperachiever of the family. And he, you know, Andrew Cuomo, you know, he was...
Yeah.
He's the governor of New York. He was the secretary of HUD, Housing and Urban Development, in the 90s for Clinton. And, of course, that's what he was the secretary of. So I was looking at Cuomo, and I'm like, okay, Cuomo, this is my thing was, like, all right. This is mainly just like a stunt that you pulled where you decided to act like the fucking cousin and like be the tough Italian guy and like do this to a kind of an unsuspecting guy who backed down kind of immediately when he saw it. But the whole, like, first of all, when you're on CNN, your brother's a governor of New York and you probably have bodyguards around. Yeah. You definitely had tough guys that were there with you. Fucking challenging some random dude to a fight isn't tough. Be like, yeah, what are you going to do? Wear your hands. Let's see your hand. Like, that's not tough because no fight will ever happen with you, Chris, because you're the brother of the fucking governor.
Oh, listen to this. Listen to this.
You're not going
to
fight.
Chris Cuomo was educated at the Albany Academy, a private prep school in Albany, followed by Yale University.
Yeah. No, this whole thing.
He's not no fucking tough guy. He's a faggot from a prep school.
Yeah, he's a prep school faggot, and he grew up in a rich house in Long Island. And, you know, his dad was governor of New York. His dad actually was from Forest Hills, so his dad came from a working class Italian family. But his dad was a total butt goy.
Oh, yeah.
Because when I looked into it, I was like, okay, so you want to act a tough New York Italian? Well, what happened to all those tough neighborhoods that tough New York Italians came out of?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they're gone. Why are they gone? Well, Mario Cuomo is a big fucking reason. And not that it wouldn't have happened, you know, had Mario Cuomo never been involved, but he was involved. It was something that was happening. It was being pushed by Jews, primarily Jewish civil rights and legal organizations. Mario Cuomo was happy to get involved. His first political job in the 1972, he was a mediator between Forest Hills and New York City and New York State about building a low-income housing project in the neighborhood. Obviously, the neighborhood didn't want it. And right. Cuomo comes in. He's like, let's make a deal. And he helped mediate that. And then he wrote a book about that. And then his whole his whole tenure, and then he was New York's Secretary of State for New York State in the late 70s. And then he was governor in the 80s. And so the whole time he was behind pushing this low-income housing in white neighborhoods. And that destroyed the Italian communities in New York City. And they all now live in Florham Park, New Jersey, or Long Island, or someplace like that.
Or Staten Island.
Yeah, Staten Island, too. Yeah, and now Staten Island's getting destroyed, too.
Oh, really?
Well, there's an influx of... They're moving Muslims into Staten Island. They're, you know, it's like crazy.
Why would that destroy? It'll just make it better.
Okay, right. Yeah, okay. Well, look, I mean, you know, the funny thing is, because of the cohesion there, that's the other thing. And that's one of the reasons they do this is because not only does Staten Island vote for Trump, because that is sort of a proxy, okay? That is a proxy that you can use for certain sentiments that people might hold. Not that Trump isn't a shill, but it's a good proxy for certain kinds of communities. Not only does Staten Island vote for Trump, it voted for Trump in like a percentage that was only seen yeah, in like no. other like deep, deep red parts of the country.
Only in like Tennessee or something.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like Staten Island, it's like you have the other four boroughs are all heavily for Clinton. And then Staten Island is like not just red, but like deep red, like 80%. And that's because it was a cohesive Italian community for a while.
Right. Or just white. I mean, there's also non-Italians there.
Yeah,
but they're white.
They assimilate to that white, that thing,
right,
you know.
Right.
Even if you're not, even if you're white and you're not Italian, you'll be welcome there and nobody will have a problem with you. In fact, they'll like you being there, but you'll kind of assimilate to how they are there. You know, like everybody does. Like I did this, right? Like I could do this fucking New York fucking thing too, Chris.
Well, you know what's funny about Staten Island is that bugmen don't go there. They go to all the other boroughs. There's a lot of bugmen. There's even bugmen moving into the Bronx.
Into the Bronx now. Yeah,
there's not a lot. I've heard conflicting things about bugmen like by the port, but not like inside of Staten Island. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they live by the ferry, right?
Yeah.
But they don't go any further than that. That's what I've heard. But yeah.
Yeah, if anything,
you think they would love it because it's the only like, you know, more affordable part of New York. And it's right across from the city.
And the ferry is free.
And it's free, yeah. You'd think there'd be more people interested, but they clearly... I heard a funny story where there's some Guidos got into a fight, like a totally probably non-political fight with Antifas in Staten Island.
They probably just thought they were faggots. I remember when this happened.
Yeah.
No, they just thought they were faggots.
Yeah. Just like, thought they were nerds or
there's
something.
There's like, what the fuck?
What the fuck are these nerds?
Yeah. Yeah, now that's actual like Italians. Like, Chris, and the other thing is like, okay, so Fredo, really? Is that really so insulting to an Italian? I mean, it's like a joke.
Well, they use that to denigrate like a failed brother.
Yeah,
even if he's not Italian, like which that's was, just a cultural reference.
Yeah, which was the implication. But he made it like this was like calling it. It was just like the Italian word for nigger. It's not like he called him a greasy wop or something.
You know what's funny is. Where was this indignation when Antifas were attacking Christopher Columbus statues in New York?
No, it was gone. Didn't exist.
Where was this indignation when they came very close to getting Christopher Columbus statues taken down under de Blasio in New York City?
Yeah.
Where was the fucking indignation?
I mean, they still attacked the Christopher Columbus statues.
Oh, fuck Chris Homo. Who the fuck? Where's this guy hanging out? I'm going to go up to him and be like, yo, what's up, Fredo? What do you do, Ben?
Yeah, no, I mean, see, that was the problem. That was the.
The legal fence. I'd clear that with him getting in my face, and then I'd fucking just.
Well, just make him throw the first punch if he's a tough guy. Yeah. Because remember, like he the guy backed down because he wasn't expecting. This is the thing about New York. Okay, people in New York are very good at running their fucking mouths.
Oh yeah,
I'll be honest with you about this. And so, you know, the guy didn't look like he was a New York native, or maybe he was from outside. You know, he looked like he was a white guy, like more polite.
Probably in the Hamptons or something.
More polite type or whatever. But anyway, the guy backed down when Cuomo got in his face, and that's what looked bad. If Cuomo started pulling that shit with me, I would just be like, get the fuck out of here, Chris Homo. You're fucking... Your brother's the fucking governor of the state. You're surrounded by bodyguards, and you're acting like over a small insult you're going to fight? The fuck out of here. You're faking. Go ahead. Punch me. Punch me, Chris.
I would fucking, if he did that to me, I would be like, oh, okay. Because, you know, once someone is sitting there be like, hit me first, you actually, I think you still have, you can hit them.
I would be very hesitant to suggest that to anybody, but.
Well, I don't know.
You still shouldn't do it. You still shouldn't do it when it's a fucking person like Chris Cuomo, who's governor. His brother is a governor and his father was, you don't want to do it. The guy's connected.
If it's on tape and he's being an asshole.
No, I mean, people would like it, but the funny thing is Ron Paul got his ass beat and, like, nothing happened to that guy. Rand Paul, but that wasn't on tape, but that guy did end up getting, like, 5 months in prison or something like that.
Well, yeah, he fucked him up for real.
He, like, broke his ribs. but, the main thing is that shit was an act, and so there were some people that were impressed with it because a tough guy act can impress people, but I was like...
I'll go on the record and say Chris Cuomo has never been in a fist fight in his life.
No, he probably hasn't, and he wouldn't do it. And that's the thing. It's just like like pretending that calling him Fredo is anything but banter and a fight. It's gay. But my thing is, like, I don't. Chris Cuomo doesn't get to play the tough Italian when his whole family history is about destroying Italian communities.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't get to do that. And doing it for money. Why did Mario Cuomo do that?
It's for money and
for
prestige.
Fucking money and power. He just sold out his own communities.
I would
and he did it his whole life.
If Chris Cuomo's wife might be part Jewish. I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if she was, but...
Grieving.
Or maybe she's... I don't even know who his wife
is. Her first name is Christina, but I wouldn't be surprised if she was like...
Well, Christina, generally Jews don't name their
kids. Yeah, it's a Gentile name, but I would not be surprised if yeah, it says here they got married in the Hamptons.
In a Catholic ceremony. She's probably Catholic, but like...
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, yeah, that guy's a fucking phony. And if he were to do that with anyone other than that really polite guy in the glasses, you know, New York, someone, if you go up to someone in New York and you do that shit, you know, someone's going to hit you.
Depends. It depends if you're a bug man or not, or who you're talking to.
I'm talking about like real New York.
Yeah, increasingly though, that's like the real New Yorkers. Like they got purged with the help of the Cuomo family. That's my whole point. Right. Is like so. It's like yeah, go ahead and do this now. I mean, if it was you or me, I would just be like, yeah, you're fucking full of shit, Chris. You're not. This is a fucking act.
Say anything. I mean, what could his family take from me anyway? I don't have much to take anyway, so I just fucking just clock him. It would just be, again, in theory, on paper.
This is just like a theoretical performance art that we're doing here, just so everyone understands. I wouldn't even fight him. I would just call him on the fact that he's full of shit, and this act he's doing is an act. And then he would have to shut up because it's like, all right, you know, Chris.
He's a herb.
Yeah.
Remember that word, herb?
Yes, I do.
It's a combination of nerd and moron. So like Chris Cuomo is a guy who's a nerd, but he's not smart. So he's like the worst of all worlds.
That's the funniest thing. He's actually like a dumb. He's actually dumb. He's really stupid. We call him Chris Fluoride Stare because he's got that like he's got the stare where you can see the whites all around his pupils. Like you can see the whites all around his eyes. It's like so bad, really bad. Anyway.
Anyway, I got to get going, man. I got to record another show in another hour. So I need a little break. But good stuff. Yep.
Yeah. Anything else? That's it. But yeah, we'll do this again next week. And thanks everybody. The show's late today.
One last thing. Tomorrow. Oh well, the People's Square is getting attacked by Zog. The channel. Well, we still have the channel up. We just had to delete everything. So stay tuned. We're going to do the Murdoch thing where we put a video up announcing where it's going to be, and then you can fuck it there. Yep.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Take care, fellas.
All right. See
you. Bye-bye.
See you.